Among the many changes that followed the fall of communism in Czechoslovakia's 1989 Velvet Revolution was unprecedented access to archives and collections previously closed to the Western world. On October 15, 1990, a traveling exhibit featuring a sampling of artifacts from one such collection, the Central Jewish Museum of Prague, came to the State of Israel, accompanied by new Czech President Václav Havel, who promised to restore many of his country's great Jewish synagogues and sites. In a New York Times article highlighting the exhibit's opening, University of Pennsylvania professor Wendy Steiner provided a brief history of this collection. In 1941, the captive leaders of the Terezin ghetto in Czechoslovakia convinced the Nazis that Jewish artifacts being confiscated daily should be preserved in a museum. Seeing the propaganda potential in this move, the Germans assigned a task to curators at what would become the Central Jewish Museum in Prague. In just 2 years, the museum's holdings increased by almost 200,000 items, all of which were carefully photographed on site before being removed to Prague for cataloging. The museum at the time arranged 5 exhibitions for the Nazis. What the Germans saw as a trophy case of archaeological remains, Jewish curators assembled as a legacy for those who would survive the Holocaust and as a guide for reestablishing a Jewish way of life. While the Jews referred to the project as a central Jewish museum, the Nazis referred to it as the Museum of an Extinct Race. As we prepare to literally touch the tragedies and the devastations throughout Jewish history, we have a message for Hitler. An extinct people do not read keynotes. It seems to me that throughout Jewish history, Jews have experienced Tisha B'Av in one of two different ways. Some generations have lived Tisha B'Av with all of the attendant horror, the pain, and the demoralization. Other generations have observed Tisha B'Av with a call of Shabbat Chazon, the haunting melody of Eicha, and the graphic descriptions of the keynote. For those who lived Tisha B'Av, the pain and suffering of Jewish peoplehood were not experienced through the rituals of Tisha B'Av, even where they were observed, but rather through the realities of their own lives. A point that's brought home so powerfully in Bialik's City of Slaughter, which I'll be discussing this afternoon, 3 o'clock at Shaar Shamayim, when Bialik marvels at the utter absurdity of reading Megillat Eicha in a community just ravaged by a massacre and pogrom. Living Tisha B'Av and observing Tisha B'Av are two entirely different Jewish experiences. As part of our observance of Tisha B'Av, you may have noticed this morning, even though we haven't yet recited a single kina, at the direction of Chazal, we omitted Tachanun, because somehow Chazal found an element of what they called Moed, festivity, strangely enough, in the midst of Tisha B'Av. I'd like to suggest that this practice stems from our tradition's inherent quest for authenticity. Chazal understood that if we're coming together as a community on Tisha B'Av morning to read keynote, then we are likely among the generations of Jews who are observing Tisha B'Av and not those who have lived Tisha B'Av. And if that's the case, our ritual reminds us that we cannot escape the fact that even as we observe Tisha B'Av, we do so looking ahead to the days and weeks afterwards when the mourning ends and the laughter begins once again. And if our Masorah throughout the ages managed to find an element of consolation and even Moed, festivity, in observing Tisha B'Av as opposed to living it, how much more so must that be true for our generation, a generation fortunate enough to celebrate Yom HaAtzmaut, Yom Yerushalayim, a generation that has been blessed with unprecedented opportunity, both materially and spiritually. Consider for a moment the powerful words of Rav Chaim David Halevi, the Sephardic Chief Rabbi of Tel Aviv, in his responsa, Aseh Lecha Rav, when asked if after the reunification of Yerushalayim in 1967, it was still appropriate to say Nachem on Tisha B'Av, especially, the questioner pointed out, the line which reads, Yerushalayim, a city which is destroyed, disgraced, and devoid of her children. And listen to the words of Rav Halevi in the 1970s. He says, Ani hirgashti b'tish'a b'av harishon acharei melchemes sheshet hayamim. I myself felt that very first Tisha B'Av following the Six-Day War, She'eneni yachol yoter lomar b'tfilati dvarim eila. I could not bring myself to recite these lines. Shehem b'chinat dover shkarim lifnei Hashem. Because I felt that it qualified as speaking falsehood before God. He goes on to describe the joy that he feels, seeing the laughter in Yerushalayim, seeing Jews come every single Yom Tov, Moed, to celebrate. And then he concludes, Afilu b'tish'a b'av, Yom ha'evel ha'le'umi, even on Tisha B'Av, our day of national mourning, ka'asher ba'im hamonei b'beit Yisrael el ha'kotel ha'ma'aravi, when throngs of Jews come to the Kotel, Me'utafim be'evlam al churban habayit, wrapped in their mourning for the temple. Gam az murgeshet pina misuyemet b'libi. Even then, there remains a very specific corner of my heart, eleha lo yachol lachador ha'evel, an area of my heart where the mourning simply cannot penetrate. Zo pina shel simcha. Because that corner of my heart is reserved for the joy of the beginning, the flowering of our redemption. The halakhic question as to whether or not the text of Nachem needs to be amended in our own day is a fascinating one and a serious one. But regardless of the position one follows, one has to admire Rav Halevi's honesty and integrity. Our generation not only observes Tisha B'Av, we do so with Israeli flags flying over the Kotel and with Jewish soldiers protecting our well-being. Now, I am not, God forbid, suggesting that there is nothing left to mourn, and I am not in any way suggesting that there is nothing more for us to yearn for wistfully. There certainly is. But I do agree with Rav Halevi that simply pretending that our Tisha B'Av is no different than the Tisha B'Av experienced by our ancestors through the ages certainly does approach Dover Shkarim Lifnei Hashem. So what does an authentic Tisha B'Av experience look and feel like in 5778? I think the language of Megillat Eicha provides us with the answer. The Jew throughout the ages who lived Tisha B'Av asks the question, Eicha, how could such misfortune befall? And as Rabbi Yosef Do Soloveitchik explains, Eicha, this question, how could this happen, is the immediate and instinctive question of a person who has just experienced life-altering emotional trauma. And so it's no accident that Eicha is the word used by Yirmiyahu, an eyewitness to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, to introduce no fewer than three chapters in the Megillah called by that name. And it's no accident that Eicha is the word used throughout Jewish history by those who lived Tisha B'Av and recorded their experiences in the form of a keynote. But there's another word that originates in the Megillah of Tisha B'Av, and one that is also used continuously throughout the ages. The fifth chapter of Eicha does not begin with the word Eicha. The fifth chapter begins with the word Zechor. And throughout Jewish history, we have been charged with Zechor. A person who's experienced devastating trauma does not want, and in many cases, should not remember. He or she wants and even needs to forget. It's not the Holocaust survivor who needs to hear the directive Zahor. Rather, it is us, the next generation, to whom this obligation is directed. Eicha is the response of those who lived Shabbat. Zahor is the obligation for those like us who observe Tisha B'Av. Zahor does not just mean to recall. It's far more fundamental than simply remembering. Zahor is central to all the fundamental experiences of Judaism. The freedom of Yetziat Mitzrayim, the beauty of Shabbat, the evil of Amalek, the gift of Torah, and the damage of slander. In his book by that very name, Professor Yosef Chaim Yerushalmi of Columbia University explains the meaning of Zahor in Jewish tradition. He writes, when we say that a people remembers, we are really saying that a past has been actively transmitted to the present generation and that this past has been accepted as meaningful. Conversely, a people forgets when the generation that possesses the past does not convey it to the next generation, or when that generation rejects what it has received and does not pass it onward. Zahor does not merely mean to recall, it means to transmit our past to the next generation. The Jewish future is always built on the foundations of the Jewish past, and the Jewish present is what determines the strength and the viability of that foundation. For those of us fortunate to be observing Tisha B'Av and not living it, our obligation, and it's a sacred one, is Zahor. To explore the tragedies of Jewish history, to understand what happened to us, what we lost, how we persevered, the strength of the Jewish spirit. We observe Tisha B'Av by making sure that both we and our children appreciate our Jewish present by understanding what it was like for those who lived Tisha B'Av. In a strange and curious passage, and with this I conclude, the Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, points out that our Jewish calendar is structured in such a way that in any given year, the first day of Pesach and Tisha B'Av always fall out on the same day of the week. Like the Seder night, Tisha B'Av is about Zechira, about transmitting our Jewish past to the next generation. We say at the Seder night, "Bechol dor v'dor chayav adam lirot es atzmo ki'ilu hu yatzah mi'Mitzrayim." In every generation, a person has to see themselves as though he or she left Egypt. Just as the freedom of Seder night cannot be successfully transmitted to the next generation without reliving the pain of slavery that preceded it, so too the glory of our Jewish present and the promise of our Jewish future cannot be successfully transmitted to the next generation without reliving the suffering of the generations that preceded us. And so it's in this spirit that I invite you all to join me on a unique journey. I'm sure it's be a very different keynote experience for you than you've had before. And I would also say that Tisha B'Av is a difficult time to make friends for the first time, and I'm sorry that it's under these circumstances that I'm meeting many of you. But I want to invite you to join me. I want to invite you to participate. The program really counts on the participation of those who are in attendance to both read some of the historical readings and to read some of the keynote. So if you'd like to participate, please let Rabbi Kalman know. And if he comes around and asks you if you would, please consider accepting. There are many different opportunities to participate. We'll be reading some of the keynote in Hebrew. We'll be reading some of them in English. There are many historical sources that we'll be reading. Women are welcome to participate as well. Rabbi Kalman will facilitate that appropriately. So let me just give you a couple of kind of ground rules or just some guidelines so that the program goes as smoothly as it can.
I always use the Rosenfeld keynote book. You know, the keynote were not composed to be mumbled silently by an audience. And I can prove that to you because majority of the keynote were written before the printing press was invented. I assure you that the people who came to participate in keynote did not have written manuscripts of the keynote. Most of them were actually written to be read responsively by a leader who had the text and knew the text, with a refrain, a simple refrain, that those who were in attendance would respond. And in that way, there developed a dynamic between the leader, it's not really a chazan because it's not tefillah, but the leader of the reading and those who were present. I try to capture that spirit. Most of the keynote that we're going to read are going to be read in that style, and I think you'll find it's far more dramatic and engaging. The other thing it provides us with the opportunity to do is, since I hope most of us have Hebrew-English translations, while the reader is reading the Hebrew, and as we wait to respond with a refrain, it's a perfect opportunity to follow along in the English translation and actually appreciate the words that are being read. Instead of having to focus on reading all the words, most of them are very difficult, we can read the translation, understand what the author of the kinah is saying, and then we can respond with the emotional refrain. If you volunteer to read one of the few kinah which are not read responsibly, leader and audience, we're going to read those. One person's going to read a line of the Hebrew, and someone else is going to respond with the English. Again, making for a much more dramatic reading and also one that will be better understood. I want to just urge you, if you do volunteer to read, ask Rabbi Kelman for one of the handouts of the kinah that you're going to be reading. In some cases, I've put some annotations that will make it much easier for the responsive reading to take place. So if you volunteer to read a kinah, just ask him for the handout. Even if you have an art scroll, even if you have a Rosenfeld, you'll trust me that it will make your reading much easier and it will make the flow back and forth much more effective. Everyone should have a booklet. Everyone that is except me.
Yeah, and me. Here, Rabbi. I don't have one either.
This booklet is going to be the substance of our program. We're going to use this as we journey through Jewish history. The approach that I've developed over the last few years is, instead of starting with the keynote and then trying to explain them and give introductions, I start with the flow of Jewish history. We start from the first tragedy or the first destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. We work our way along the timeline of Jewish history, discussing not only the flow of Jewish history, but the various tragedies that occurred. Of course, we can't cover all the tragedies of Jewish history, so I've selected a few along the way. And then when we get to those tragedies, we'll read some historical readings, in many cases primary source material, so that we have a sense of the horror and the dread and the tragedy of what happened. And then we'll read a kinah that was composed in response to that tragedy. So the kinos follow the timeline of history instead of our introductions and explanations following whatever order the kinos were compiled in. How many, I don't know if you asked this already, but do most people have either the Rosenfeld kinah book or an art scroll? If you don't, There are a few copies of the actual keynote that we're going to use, and I would encourage those of you who don't have one of those two books to avail yourself of those copies. Again, it'll make for, I think, a more meaningful and participatory experience. Okay. The Tisha B'Av story on page one of your booklet begins, of course, with the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash in the year 586 BCE. The Jewish Commonwealth struggled to maintain its morality. We had some wonderful kings, we had some dreadful kings, we had a few in between. We made wise political moves, we made some very unwise political moves. God sent Nevi'im to warn us that our society and civilization was not living up to the expectations and the standards that God sent. We heeded the call of the Navi, sometimes for short periods of time, but ultimately we sunk into utter corruption, and God felt the time had come to destroy the Beit HaMikdash. Last night, of course, we read Megillat Eicha. Today, we'll begin with a narrative, the story of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash from Malachim Bet, as recorded in Tanakh. So whoever is going to read the first source, if you wouldn't mind, please read on page one the selection from Malachim Bet. And if you'd like, you can take the mic, you can sit down, whatever's most comfortable for you.
And in the ninth year of his reign, on the 10th day of the 10th month, Nebuchadnezzar moved against Jerusalem with his whole army. He besieged it, and they built towers against it all around. The city continued in a state of siege until the 11th year of King Zedekiah. By the 9th day of the 4th month, the famine had become acute in the city. There was no food left for the common people. Then the wall of the city was breached. King Zedekiah set out in stealth for the Arabah, but the Chaldean troops pursued him, and they overtook him in the hills of Jericho as his entire force left him and scattered. They captured the king and brought him before the king of Babylon at Riblah, and they put him on trial. They slaughtered Zedekiah's sons before his eyes, and then Zedekiah's eyes were put out. He was chained in bronze fetters, and he was brought to Babylon. On the 7th day of the 5th month, that was the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, Nebuzaradan, the chief of the guards, an officer of the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem. He burned the house of the Lord, the king's palace, and all the houses of Jerusalem. He burned down the house of every notable person. The entire Chaldean force that was with the chief of the guard tore down the walls of Jerusalem on every side. The remnant of the people that was left in the city were taken into exile by Nebuzaradan, the chief of the guards. But some of the poorest in the land were left by the chief of the guards to be the vine dressers and field hands. The Chaldeans broke up the bronze columns of the house of the Lord, the stands, and the bronze sink that was in the house of the Lord, and they carried the bronze away to Babylon. They also took all the pails, scrapers, snuffers, ladles, and all the other bronze vessels used in the service. The chief of the guards took whatever was of gold and whatever was of silver, fire pans and sprinkling bowls. The chief of the guards also took Sariah, the chief priest, Sephaniah, the deputy priest, and the three guardians of the threshold. And from the city he took a eunuch who was in command of the soldiers, five royal privy counselors who were present in the city, the scribe of the army commander, who was in charge of mustering the people of the land, and 60 of the common people who were inside the city. Nebuzaradan, the chief of the guards, took them and brought them to the king of Babylon at Riblah. The king of Babylon had them struck down and put to death at Riblah in the region of Hamath. Thus Judah was exiled from its land.
You'll see in the middle of the page it says Kina number 9, page 93. For each of our Kina reading, there's a designation for the number on the page, and then following the slash, another number and page. The first one represents the Rosenfeld, and the second one the Artscroll. So please turn to the first Kina that we're going to recite, either on page 93 in Rosenfeld, page 158 in Artscroll. Because this is the first one that we're doing, I'll read the Hebrew, and you can follow along with the English, and everybody responds at the end of each stanza, Zechor Hashem Mehayalanu. Just a brief word about the structure of this kina. Each stanza, of course, begins with the word Eicha, which is the word of Jewish tragedy. The poem, which is authored by Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, the mysterious poet laureate of the Jewish people, is, as Kalir often did, a complex alphabetical structure. Alphabetical structure is used to convey comprehensiveness. Like we say in English, from A to Z. When an author feels that he or she can't do justice to a topic but wants to convey how comprehensive the topic is, an alphabetical structure is often used. Okay, page 93 in the Rosenfeld, 158 in the Artsville. Eicha atzda be'apcha la'abed b'yad adumim amunecha v'lo zacharta b'ris bein b'sarim asher b'irarta l'vukunecha u'v'chein b'itinu.
Zechor Adonai be'ayalanu.
Eicha g'arta b'gara secha laglos p'yageim g'ilecha v'lo zacharta d'ilugos d'ilug derech asher d'ibarta l'idgalecha u'v'chein d'ibarnu. Eicha hagta behegionecha lahadof biyad holalim hamonecha v'lo zacharta bituk bi'ud v'eses asher biyadat aliv udecha v'chein v'konar anu. Eicha zanachta bezaamcha lezalzel biyad zarim zvulecha v'lo zacharta chitun chukei chorei v'asher chakakta lechamulecha v'chein chivinu. Eicha tarachta b'torchacha l'trof b'yat meim t'la'echa v'lo zacharta yikar yedidus yosher asher yichadata liyod'echa u'v'chein yololnu. Eicha kivanta b'chascha l'chalos b'yat koshlim karmecha v'lo zacharta lo yisach li'olam asher limadata lil'kuchecha u'v'chein lahaganu. Eicha mila'olta b'moscha l'mchos b'yad monim minas'echa v'lo zacharta nisiyas notzas nesher asher nasata linsu'echa u'v'chein ahinu. Eicha sachta b'sarcha l'sager b'yad se'afim s'adecha v'lo zacharta oz adi adayim asher itarta la'avodecha u'v'chein haninu. Eicha patzta b'pachtecha l'fager b'yad paritzim p'lecha v'lo zacharta tzalas tzvi tzedek asher tzofanta l'tzva'echa u'v'chein tzachnu. Eicha karasa b'kriyascha laknos b'yad kamim kruecha v'lo zacharta regesh rechev ribosayim asher atzis al reyecha u'v'chein rigananu. Eicha shafta b'shafach l'shalos b'yad sholalim shleimecha v'lo zacharta tokev talta le'tohar asher tikanta l'smimecha u'v'chein te'ananu.
Zechor Adonai me'ayalanu.
Te'ananu l'shpoch kamayim malma b'yom zeh nishbinu famayim Zachri b'yosi yosheves b'shalva b'yerushalayim Roganti v'ata adeh ad chug shamayim. We have four fast days that commemorate the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. I'm sure you're all familiar. But it's very important to understand the sequence of those four fast days because there's a very powerful message in them. The first stage in the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash was the Babylonians laying siege to Jerusalem. The siege lasted for 18 months. It began, of course, on the 10th of Tammuz, lasted for a year and a half, so that brings us from winter of Asar... I'm sorry, did I not say that?
You said Tammuz, it's okay.
The 10th of... Thank you. The 10th of Tevet in the winter, 18 months later, that brings us to summer. That's when the walls were finally breached because the people of Yerushalayim were deemed weak enough to be attacked. Their supplies had run out. Babylonians breached the walls on Shavuos Arba Tammuz. 3 weeks later, brings us to today, Tisha B'Av, when the Babylonian forces reached the Beit HaMikdash, set it aflame, burned it to the ground. Now one would think that the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash would be the culmination of the mourning process. But Tisha B'Av is only the third fast in sequence. Because after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash, the Babylonians left Jerusalem, the province, in the hands of a Jewish governor. And the Tanakh tells us that they managed to take away anyone they thought was a threat, the leadership, the nobles. But they left some of the Hamon Am, mostly the poor, the elderly, but they left it under the control of a Jewish governor. That Jewish governor, of course, was Gedalia ben Achikam. But there were Jews, the Tanakh tells us, who came from Shevet Yehuda, descendants of David HaMelech, who said, we can't be ruled by a governor who's not of the Davidic line. Petty jealousies and politics immediately enters the fray. And two Jews who think they're doing the Jewish people a favor, who are angered by Jewish leadership deciding to cooperate with the powers that be with the Babylonians. Gedalia served at the wish of Nebuchadnezzar, and you know the story, they assassinated him. Death of Gedalia is tragic, but as we all know, there have been many, many Jews who have died over the years. But amazingly, there's a fourth fast day in the sequence, and that's Tzom Gedalia. And it's actually Tzom Gedalia, which is the culmination of the destruction process in the first Beit HaMikdash. And that's very, very important to understand, that Chazal appreciated the fact that even though there was no Beit HaMikdash, the fact that the land of Israel remained under Jewish control, that in and of itself was extremely significant. And the loss of that, I don't know if you would call it sovereignty, but certainly governance and control, the loss of that control was a tragedy worthy itself of a fast day. If you think about that from the inverse, if Chazal understood that even absent of Beit HaMikdash, control over the land, Jewish control over the land of Israel was critically important, and the loss of that control warranted a fast day, then in the inverse, we can appreciate that gaining Jewish control over the land of Israel, even absent a Beit HaMikdash that we continue to yearn for, if its loss was worthy of a fast day, then gaining that sovereignty is certainly worthy of celebration and days of Hallel and Hodah. The Jewish people are dispersed into diaspora, taken Al Naharot Bavel to Babylonia, where after an initial period of shock, they managed to regroup. And amazingly, considering how much of Jewish life is based on the land of Israel and revolved around the Beit HaMikdash, were able to continue Jewish life with the help of Yechezkel. Approximately 70 years later, they're given permission to return to the land of Israel by Koresh, by Cyrus. Again, an interesting historical note, that permission for the Jewish people to return to the land of Israel was given by secular authorities, by those who controlled that area of the world. Unfortunately, instead of the Jewish people flocking to the land of Israel, only a small group return. This is part of the story of Jewish life. We're an adaptable people, and we settle in, and it's very difficult for us to pick ourselves up even when the opportunity presents itself. The going is very difficult in the beginning. The current inhabitants of the land of Israel are not happy to see the Jewish people come back, and they do all they can to subvert their work. With the help of Ezra and Nehemiah, the Jewish people manage to reestablish themselves in the land of Israel, rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, not quite the glorious Beit HaMikdash that existed the first time around, but nonetheless, we were home, we had a Beit HaMikdash. The Persians give way to the Greeks, Alexander the Great. We have numerous stories in Chazal, how enamored he was with the Beit HaMikdash and the Jewish people, and was very favorably disposed to the Jewish people. That's how Alexander became a genuinely Jewish name, in recognition of the support that Alexander the Great gave to the Jewish people. But after Alexander's death, and his empire is divided up into three, the land of Israel becomes a battleground and the struggle between the different empires, especially the Seleucids in Syria and the Ptolemies in Egypt. When Rome emerges as the next great world power, the Jewish people have a dilemma. It becomes fairly clear that Rome seeks domination of the world at the time, and Jewish schism begins over essentially the question of, should we capitulate to Rome or should we insist on maintaining our own sovereignty? Are we willing to fight Rome over it, or would it be better for us to continue to live in the land of Israel, have a Beit HaMikdash, which the Romans initially were not interested in destroying, but that would mean kowtowing, if you will, to Roman authority. And here, an age-old question, which has repeated itself, I don't know if it's accurate to say throughout Jewish history, but certainly throughout the time that we had a presence in the land of Israel, and continuing up until today, and the question is, how much to compromise, how much to stand our ground. Ultimately, those who favored revolt against Rome won out, and amidst the civil war, Rome comes in and destroys the second Beit HaMikdash. So I'd like someone to please read on the bottom of page one the account of the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, which no longer comes from Tanakh because Tanakh had long ended, but comes from the historian of the time period, Flavius Josephus.
So Titus retired into the Tower of Antonia and resolved to storm the temple the next day early in the morning with his whole army and to encamp round about the Holy House. But as for that house, God had for certain long ago doomed it to the fire. And now that fatal day was come, according to the revolution of ages, it was the 10th day of the month, Laus Av, upon which it was formerly burnt by the king of Babylon. One cannot but wonder at the accuracy of this period there to relating, for the same month and days were now observed. As I said before, wherein the holy house was burnt formerly by the Babylonians, while the whole house was on fire, everything was plunder that came to hand. And 10,000 of those that were caught were slain, children and old men and profane persons, and priests were all slain in the same manner. Those that made supplication for their lives as those that defended themselves by fighting. Nor can one imagine anything greater or more terrible, for the ground did nowhere appear visible because of the dead bodies that lay on it.
Turn in your keynote book in the Rosenfeld to keynote number 34, page 146. Again, the Art Scroll, keynote number 32. This keynote, like the previous one, also refers to the fallen glory of the Beit HaMikdash. We'll read it in a very similar way. It's a different author, but again has an alphabetical structure to try to capture the comprehensiveness of the loss. If we have a volunteer to read, that would be wonderful, and we'll respond at the end of each stanza, Oy Mehayalanu, and again the opportunity while the reader reads his line to follow along in English and appreciate the power of the poetry.
Okay. Etzbasai shaflu veshasai naflu ayo b'nei tzion golu v'cholai v'ayshalu.
Oy mehayolonu.
Bayez vazaros v'yom afnagaros ayo b'nei shirim v'sharos kimo shalei kaderos.
Oy mehayolonu.
Gulas hakosores kinevel nishpores ayo ateres tifares le'aretz nigeres.
Oy mehayolonu.
Darche ir avelos ve'achadilu hakolos ayo arachos haslulos ashechos ve'afelos.
Oy mehayolonu.
Hecha luksolov emoye hemu alov ayo al shulchan v'chaylov u'meil al shulov.
Oy mehayolonu.
Vavei hamudim biyad b'nei avadim ayo v'akef rabadim rabim v'nechvadim.
Oy mehayolonu.
Zivachim u'minachos l'mashos u'maduchos ayo hadar mizbachos b'gayon v'anachos.
Oy mehayolonu.
Chil v'asorog l'cherev u'laharog ayo binyon hanerog nedosh b'merog.
Oy mehayolonu.
Teloim v'vukorim meni nedorim ayo v'tavos u'durim v'nanosim ha'udurim.
Oy mehayolonu.
Yofi nivroches echad nehapeches ayo v'gefen u'feroches u'minchas mirboches.
Oy mehayolonu.
Kiyor imkano hasa'if bo v'eino ayo haner im shamno lukach v'mechono.
Oy mehayolonu.
Lechem haponim su olof kinim ayo v'tured rimonim l'mirmam nesunim.
Oy mehayolonu.
Menorah haTorah orat ne'adora ayo magrefa yikorat netula v'chaseira.
Oy mehayolonu.
Noyam hanechoshes levodim levoshes ayo maseh hareshes v'chalos marecheshes.
Oy mehayolonu.
Chazos unesachim menu nechashchim ayo uvoaz v'yochin l'eretz nishlachim.
Oy mehayolonu.
Al machta umizrak ayev shein chorok ayo teni gam kuz zorok v'ez charbo hivrak.
Oy mehayolonu.
Pishpashim ushorim artzom nigorim ayo hatumim v'horim echo nistorim.
Oy mehayolonu.
Sifras ma'atafos ve'eva nehadafos ayo lishchos hayofos uveis ha'achlifos.
Oy mehayolonu.
Kir mogein eira v'kir ker ha'ara ayo v'zarku hamara v'zarfu habira.
Oy mehayolonu.
Rashay mishmeros suvuchim bitzoros ayo v'sarei ha'asuros piyad balei hataros.
Oy mehayolonu.
Shar bas rabim lezavei arabim ayo lekachu hakruvim tupim ba'abuvim.
Oy mehayolonu.
Toim hanaim labanim hasnaim ayo befaz mezulaim lechudos hasinaim.
Oy mehayolonu.
Panim hayikorim becharvos nidkorim ayo levi'im hamosharim bekohanim maktirim.
Oh, hayolanu.
Ravim ufrachim lichitzim ushlachim ayo bechoros utufochim biyagon enochim.
Oh, hayolanu.
Umavtecho zorku bishuram kilaku ayo beavon nimku Namaku b'chapayim sofoku.
Oy mehayolonu.
Kapos uvzvichim meni nefsokim ayo banai ve'enokim ba'eretz mirchokim.
Oy mehayolonu.
Chai chobo gova v'tzitz tahor nishba ayo nir marav kova v'simchas beis ha'shoeva.
Oy mehayolonu.
Zeydim b'nei adina al b'nei mimana ayo Pe'er bigdei kehuna biyadom nitna.
Oy, ve'hayalanu.
Ketores, nederes, varon, v'chapores, oyotikin, bazores, takpeit, nifzores, Yeshua tehelanu.
Oy, ve'hayalanu.
Please turn to the next kinat, kinat number 33, page 144 in Rosenfeld, 304 in the Arts Garden. Before we move on from the destruction of both Batei Mikdash, we'll sing together a beautiful and powerful kina that's a study in contrast, and it tells us how much hope and how much promise there was when we left Mitzrayim, the glorious destiny that awaited us, and contrasts that with the devastation and destruction that characterized the Jewish situation when we were exiled from Jerusalem. The tune, which you'll recognize, you'll also note that the tune helps to emphasize the theme of the kina. Each line, the first line, Betzeisi Mitzrayim, is an ascending melody. It speaks of promise and hope, whereas the second line, Betzeisi Mirushalayim, then descends, indicating the reversal of Jewish fortune. Please join me. You can sing along with me both each stanza, or you can respond with the refrain. Eish tukad bikirvi v'halosi alibi b'tzeisi mitrayin kinim aira l'man azkira b'tzeisi mirushalayim. Az yashir Moshe ashir lo inashe b'tzeisi mitrayin. Vaikonein Yirmiya v'nahan hinihya b'tzeisi mirushalayim. Beisi hiskonan v'shachan he'anan b'tzeisi mitrayim. V'chamas el shachna alai ka'anana b'tzeisi mirushalayim. Galei yam hamu v'chachom akamu b'tzeisi mitrayim. Zdonim shatafu v'yaroshi tafu b'tzeisi mirushalayim. Degan shamayim b'tzur yazuv mayim b'tzeisi mitrayim. La'ana v'samrurim umayim hamarim b'tzeisi mirushalayim. Hashkeim v'ha'arev sevivos harchorev b'tzeisi mitrayim. Korei el evel al naharos babel b'tzeisi mirushalayim. Umare kvod Adonai keishochel es lefanai b'tzeisi mitrayim. V'cherev letusha v'tevach netusha b'tzeisi mirushalayim. Zevach u'mincha v'shemen ha'mishcha b'tzeisi mitrayim. Sgulas el lekucha katzon lativcha b'tzeisi mirushalayim. Chagim v'shabbosos u'mofsim v'yosos b'tzeisi mitrayim. Tanis ve'evel urdov ha'hevel b'tzeisi mirushalayim. Tovu ohalim le'arba digalim b'tzeisi mitrayim. Ohalei yishmeilim u'machanos harelim b'tzeisi mirushalayim. Yovel u'shmita v'eretz shoketa b'tzeisi mitrayim. Machur l'tzmisus v'charus v'chrisus b'tzeisi mirushalayim. Kapores v'aron v'avnei zikaron b'tzeisi mitrayim. V'avnei hakala u'chlei habala b'tzeisi mirushalayim. Levim v'aharonim
Shivim zikeinim b'tzeisim imitrayim Noksim umonim umochrim v'konim b'tzeisim irushalayim Moshe yireinu v'aharon yanacheinu b'tzeisim imitrayim Nebuchadnezzar kifsar v'adrianus kesar b'tzeisim irushalayim Naroch milchama v'adonai shama b'tzeisim imitrayim Rachak mimenu v'hine einenu b'tzeisim irushalayim Sisrei faroches v'sidrei maroches b'tzeisim imitrayim Chema nitaches b'yolai sochaches b'tzeisim irushalayim Olos uzvachim v'ishei nichochim v'tzeisim imitrayim V'chutzos medukarim b'nei tzion ha'yikarim v'tzeisim irushalayim Parei migvaos v'chavod nikvaos v'tzeisim imitrayim Shrikos usruos v'kolos uzvaos v'tzeisim irushalayim Tzitz ha-zahav v'chamshel v'rahav v'tzeisim imitrayim Hushlach ha-nezer v'yafas ha-ezer v'tzeisim irushalayim Kedusha u'nevuah u'chvod Adonai nirah v'tzeisim imitrayim Nigala u'mora v'ruach ha-tumah v'tzeisim irushalayim Rina v'ishua v'chatzos ros ha-truah v'tzeisim imitrayim Zakas olol v'nakas cholol v'tzeisim irushalayim Shulchan u'menorah v'chalil u'ktorah v'tzeisim imitrayim Elil v'soeva u'fesel u'matzeva v'tzeisim irushalayim Torah u'seudah v'seder ha'avodah v'tzeisim imitrayim Sason v'simcha v'nas yagon v'anacha v'shuvi l'Yerushalayim.
Okay.
When the Romans destroyed the second Beit HaMikdash and exiled certainly Jewish power, they certainly did not expect the Jewish people to continue to thrive in any way, or even to survive. That was just not what happened when the Roman Empire was finished with them. But the story of the Jewish people has never been a typical story of history, and we'll see in the next source, which really speaks for itself, how Jewish history continues following the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, page 2 in the booklet. A volunteer to please read.
Bar Kokhba revolt and the fall of Beitar. Against the cruelties of Trajan and Hadrian, the Jews of the Roman provinces rose in rebellion. The revolt spread to Palestine. So vigorous was the uprising that Hadrian resolved to crush it once and for all into complete submission. Like Antiochus, he determined to block out the stubborn Jewish religion. He would make Jerusalem a pagan city, and where the Holy Temple had stood, he would rear an heathen shrine. By the menace of Rome, led up in passion to For years, in secret discontent, they have been storming arms, and now in the year 132 of the Common Era, they faced Hadrian as almost 70 years earlier they had faced Titus. In the daring young soldier who came forward to lead them in the crisis, the Jews thought that they had at last found a deliverer. In him they saw the Redeemer who should free them from the intolerable tyranny of Rome and restore the kingdom of Israel. The people hailed as Bar Kokhba, son of the star, this youth who inspired them with his splendid height and strength, his personal courage and soldierly ability. Even the great teacher, Rabbi Akiva, was convinced that here was the king, the Messiah. Around Bar Kokhba's flank gathered 500,000 people. Against them, Hadrian sent his legions, only to have them shattered and driven back. Like Judah the Maccabee, Bar Kokhba led his enthusiastic army from victory to victory. 50 fortresses fell into his hands and 1,000 villages. He struck to commemorate his victory. Then Hadrian, seriously armed, summoned from the distant Britain his most able general, Julius Severus. One after the other, the fortresses guarding the frontier capitulated to him. At last, Beta, the strongest, alone remained. This fort, Bar Kokhba, held for a year with stubborn resistance, desperately trying to cut his way through the besieged army. Against so brave an army, with so brave a leader, even the finest soldiers of the age were helpless. But within the walls of the beleaguered city, there were accomplices of the enemy, starvation and treason. Through a subterranean passage, some Samaritans, it is said, led the Romans into the fortress. Then followed carnage, so awful that the Roman horses, we are told, waded to their nostrils in blood. More than 500,000 were slain by the sword, and thousands more perished by fire and starvation. Yet so great were the Roman losses that Hadrian, in his message to the Roman Senate, is reported to have omitted the usual formula, I and the army are well. It was in the year 135 that Beta fell on the 9th of Av. Jewish tradition tells us the day of mourning for the destruction of the temple. Over what had been Jerusalem, the plowshare was passed, and upon old foundations a Roman city arose. Now began indeed an era of the most dire persecution. Hadrian, shrewder than Vespasian, realized that the strength of the Jews lay in their religion. Crush that, and their resistance would die out. Like Antiochus, he forbade the study of the law and punished mercilessly those who tried to evade this decree. Those teachers who dared still to conduct schools were wrapped in scrolls of the law and set afire, or were torn to slow death with sharp iron prongs. Every horrible torture that the most barbarous ingenuity could devise was used to break the spirit of the Jewish resistance.
Following the Bar Kokhba revolt, as you just heard, the Romans understood that as important as the Beit HaMikdash and Yerushalayim were to the Jewish people, the lifeblood of the Jewish people was Jewish learning and the Torah. They failed to appreciate that when they destroyed the Beit HaMikdash and Yerushalayim. They were surprised at the vitality that remained amongst the Jewish people But at this point, after the Bar Kokhba revolt, recognized that if they wanted to snuff out the Jewish people, they would have to mount a campaign not against their capital city and not against their spiritual center, but against the teachers. And the greatest campaign to hunt down the teachers of Torah thus began, a campaign that was so fierce that Judaism actually feared for its survival. There is a halakha that you're not allowed to write down Torah Shebaal Peh. We're supposed to have two different forms of learning, one which is written, and that's Tanakh, and the other which is a vibrant oral tradition that's passed from teacher to student, from generation to generation. And that was a critical value for the Jewish people. During this time, when the Romans hunted down the teachers of Torah, the sages feared that the oral tradition would be lost. And it's during this time that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi makes the incredibly courageous decision, one made in the spirit of Eis La'asos La'ashem Heferu Sarosecha. There are times when drastic measures have to be taken. He recorded the Mishnah, put it into print, so that the Jewish tradition, Torah Shebaal Peh, could survive this onslaught. During this time, we lost so many of the great teachers of Torah, and that gave rise to two famous piyutim that we read on two different occasions throughout the year. One that we read on Yom Kippur, Eila Ezkara, where we recount the torturing and the assassination of 10 great teachers of Torah, and once on Tisha B'Av. So I ask you to turn to Kinnah number 23, page 125 in Rosenfeld. It's page 248 in the Art Scroll. This one's a little bit tricky to read responsively. So what we're going to do is I'm going to read a line in Hebrew. We have a volunteer to read a line of translation and listen and feel the power of the dramatic story of not the soldiers and not the generals, but the teachers of the Jewish people being hunted down, tortured, and then murdered. Arzei halavanon adirei haTorah ba'alei sireisin b'mishnah u'gemara giborei choach amaleha b'tahara.
Cedars of Lebanon, the noble of the law, great champions in Mishnah and in Talmud, mighty in strength, who toiled at their books in purity.
Damam nishpach v'nashasa gvura hinam kedoshei harugei malchus asara v'al eile ani vochia v'eini nigra.
Behold the 10 martyrs that were massacred by the dominion of Rome. Their blood has been shed and their strength failed. Oh, for these do I weep, and my eye gushes forth in tears.
Zos bezochri ezak v'mara chemdas Yisrael kilei hakodesh nezer v'atara tehorei lev kedoshim meisu b'misach amura.
When I remember this, I cry out bitterly for the choice flower of Israel, the holy vessels, the crown and diadem, pure in heart and holy, they died a dreadful death.
Yadu goral mirishol nachere berura kinfol goral al rabban shimon pashat tzavaro uvacha kinigzira gzira le rabban shimon chazar hasar lehargo b'nefesh nitzura.
They threw lots to see who should be chosen first for the sword, and when the lot fell on Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, he barred his neck and wept when the decree was issued, when the general returned to Rabbi Shimon to kill him with crafty design.
Mizera Aharon Shaal Bevakasha Livkos Al Ben Hagvira Natal Rosho Nisano Al Arkibosa Al Arkubotav Minora Hatehora.
Descendant of the seed of Aaron, craved
leave to weep over the son of the princess. He took his head and laid it on his knees and cried, O pure land.
Sam einav al einav ufiv al piv be'ava u'gimura anav ve'omar peh hamiskaper harbat Torah.
He put his eyes upon his eyes, his mouth upon his
mouth of perfect love, spoke and said, O mouth that grew strong in the Torah.
Pis'om niknesa alav misa mishuna v'chamura tziva lehapshit es rosho b'sa'ar haschira.
A terrible and harsh death was suddenly decreed against you. He ordered them to flay his head with a hired blade.
Kiyam be'oro amru l'nafsheich shechiv in avora rasha haposheit eis higia limkom tfilin mitzvas barat tza'ak tze'aka v'nizdaza olam ve'eretz hisforera. Me'acharav heviu es Rabbi Akiva Oker harim v'tochanan zo b'zo b'svara V'sarku es b'saro b'masrek barzel lehishtabara Yatzesa nishmaso be'echad uvas kol amra Ashrecha Rabbi Akiva gufcha tahor b'chol minei tahara.
After him, they brought Rabbi Akiva, who was unsurpassed in logical deduction of the law, and they flayed his flesh with an iron comb to shatter his faith in God. His soul expired with the recitation of the word one, and a heavenly voice proclaimed, Happy are you, Rabbi Akiva. Your body is pure with every kind of purity.
Ben Bava, Rabbi Yehuda Acharav Heviu, Vishivron Lei Veazhara, Nerag Ben Shivim Shana Bidei Arura, Yoshev Besanis Haya, Naki Vachasid Belachto Lemahara.
In his work.
Rabbi Chananya ben Tradion Acharav Makil Kihilos B'tzion Shara Yoshev Doresh Sefer Torah Imo V'hikifuhu B'chavilei Zmora Es Ha'or Hitzisu Bahem Ukrachuhu B'sefer Torah Svogin shel tzemer, hinichu al libo, shelo yamus mehira.
Rabbi Chananya, the son of Tradion, who used to gather crowds at the gates of Zion, was brought in after him. He sat with the scroll of the law and expounded the Torah. They wrapped him in the scroll, placed bundles of vine tendrils around him, and set them on fire. They then placed tufts of damp wool on his heart so that he should not die quickly.
Chasid Rabbi Yeshevav HaSofer Haraguhu Am Amora Zerakuhu V'Hishlichu Laklavim V'lo Hokvar B'Kura Yatzesa Bas Kol Alav Shelo Hiniach Kalum Mitoras Moshe L'Shomra.
The wicked people then killed Rabbi Yeshevav, the pious scribe. They cast him to the dogs, and he lacked burial. Whereupon a heavenly voice came forth and proclaimed that he had not left a single point of the law of Moses unfulfilled.
Ve'acharav, Rabbi Chutzpis b'yom evra, Of ha'poreach nisrach b'haval piv kim dura.
After him, on the same day of wrath, they slew Rabbi Chutzpit, the breath of whose mouth, when he expounded the law, was so fiery with his learning as to single a passing bird.
Tzadik Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua ba'acharona neherag b'madkeira Yom erev Shabbos haya zman kiddush v'yikadesh v'yikra Cherev sholfu alav v'lo hinichuhu v'chayim legamra Yatzesa nishmaso b'vara Elohim yotzer v'tzar tzura.
The last martyr, Rabbi Elazar, the son of Shamua, was murdered by the piercing of the sword. It was the eve of Shabbat, the time of saying the Kiddush,
and as he began to recite the Kiddush, they drew a sword upon him and did not allow him to finish the Kiddush alive. His soul expired when he came to the word which God created, who fashioned and varied the forms of his creatures.
Kahena v'chahena hosifu b'nei avla le'anos b'gara b'skilas reifa hereg v'chenek mi yuchal l'sha'ara no seres mimena yochlu arayos sefizura chazei hatenufa v'shok hateruma tarfu aryeh v'hakfira.
Men of violence continued time on time to afflict us, and despite with the penalties of stoning, burning, beheading, and strangling, who can gauge the casualties? At that was left of the dispersed flock, the lions did devour, the breast of wave offering and the thigh of heave offering, the lion and lioness have torn asunder.
Yeti v'adonai velo yosifo liyasera. Amet birkayim koshlos chilek Yaakov Moshiach beis tzara.
O may the Lord deal well with us and chastise us no more. Strengthen the feeble knees, O thou who art the portion of Jacob and a saver in a time of trouble.
Letzedek yimloch melech yomar shalmu yimei evleich li'oro nisavan eilech.
May the king reign in righteousness, and may he say, the days of your mourning have ended. Then shall we set forth and walk in his light.
Please turn to page 3 in your booklet. Following the destruction of Second Beit HaMikdash and the defeat of the Jewish people at Beitar, Jewish life pretty much came to an end in the land of Israel. Small groups of Jews made their way across the Mediterranean. Some were taken forcibly to Italy as slaves. Some made their way as merchants. Jewish communities were formed for a short but rather glorious period of time in Italy. But as the Catholic Church began its ascent, and as Rome became the locus of that ascent, it became more and more difficult for Jewish life to thrive in Italy. And so, following one of the basic principles of Jewish migration, when circumstances get difficult in a particular area, the Jewish people begin to migrate in search of less persecution. Jews made their way north into Europe. One of the first forays of the Jewish people into Europe. For a few hundred years, we have almost nothing, no creative output, very little history of the Jews of Europe. What we know of them is that they fanned out into the frontiers of Europe, small merchant outposts, sometimes small communities, maybe didn't even have enough for a minyan in some places. They tried to subside, they tried to continue their Jewish practices, and with the rise of the Holy Roman Empire, particularly Charlemagne in the 8th century, Charlemagne was one of the first to recognize the potential that the Jewish people, with their vast network far-flung all over the civilized world and their acumen for trading, their ability to produce wealth on the move, the vast potential that had for his empire. And throughout history, emperors and kings who needed to expand their empire and who were in need of cash, which was a rare commodity in the ancient world, always turned to the Jews with welcome and open arms, because the Jews could produce cash like no one else could. And the Jews would produce that cash through their trading merchant activities. The emperor would tax. The emperor would offer protection, and usually for a few hundred years, Jewish life would be good, until the emperor either had not quite as much need for that cash, or the emperor tired of the Jews and the complaints against the Jews and their money-making ways, in which case the emperor would revoke or ignore the promise of protection that he had extended, usually with tragic ends for those Jewish communities. So Charlemagne offers welcome to the Jewish people to settle the Rhineland cities along the Rhine River, which would dramatically improve their trading ability. And the Jews of Europe come kind of out of the woodwork from their remote trading outposts and come and settle these three cities, creating three glorious Jewish cities, ones that prospered economically. And when Jews come together in strength, Jewish learning also flourishes. And we have the resurgence of Jewish learning in Europe. In the 8th, 9th, 10th centuries, most of what we have for Jewish learning comes still from Babel, from the Gaonim. But with the creation of the Jewish communities of the Rhineland and the establishment of yeshivot, the yeshivot that would produce some of the great Chachmei Ashkenaz, the great sages of Ashkenaz, we have again a flourishing of Jewish learning. All of that comes to a screeching and horrific end at the end of the 11th century. And we'll let the historical reading of the introduction speak for itself, the top of page 3.
First Crusade, 1096 CE. In the year 1095, the Catholic Church, aroused by Muslim conquest in Palestine, proclaimed a crusade to recover Jerusalem and the Holy Sepulchre. The following year, in the spring of 1096, bands of zealous crusaders, led by the monks and soldiers, but also including runaway serfs, ambitious businessmen, adventurers, and criminals, set out for the Holy Land. As they passed through Germany on their way to Jerusalem, this motley crew killed thousands of infidel Jews, particularly in the larger cities such as Spire, Worms, and Magenta. In May 1096, a band of crusaders led by Amico, a German noble, forced his way into the city of Mayence and finally into the palace where the Jews had taken refuge. The slaughter and suicide of the Jews there are graphically described in the following selection, taken from a Hebrew account by Solomon bar Samson, about whom we know very little. It was on the 3rd of Sivan, Tuesday, May 7th, 1096, at noon, that Emiko the Wicked, a German noble, laid a band of plundering German and French crusaders through the gates of the city. Panic was great in the town. Each Jew in the inner court of the bishop girded on his weapons and all moved towards the bishop's palace gate to fight the crusaders and the citizens. The bishop's men, who had promised to help them, were the very first to flee, thus delivering the Jews into the hands of the enemy. When the children of the covenant saw that the heavenly decree of death had been issued and that the enemy had conquered them and had entered the courtyard, then all of them, old men and young, women and children, servants and maids, cried out together to the Father in heaven and, weeping for themselves and for their lives, accepted as just the sentence of God. One to another they said, "Let us be strong and let us bear the yoke of the holy religion, for only in this world can the enemy kill us. Happy is anyone who is killed or slaughtered, who dies for the sanctity of his name, so that he is ready to enter the world to come, to dwell in the heavenly camp with the righteous, with Rabbi Akiva and his companions, the pillars of the universe who are killed for his name's sake." Then all of them, to a man, cried out with a loud voice, "Now we must delay no longer, for the enemy is already upon us. Let us hasten and offer ourselves as a sacrifice to the Lord. Let him who has a knife examine it that is not nicked. A nick in a slaughterer's knife would make it ritually unfit. And let him come and slaughter us for the sanctification of the only one, the everlasting. And then let him cut his own throat or plunge the knife into his own body." The women were girded their loins with strength and slew their sons and their daughters and then themselves. Many men, too, plucked their courage and killed their wives, their sons, their infants. The tender and delicate mother slaughtered the babe she had played with. All of them, men and women, arose and slaughtered one another. The maidens and the young brides and grooms looked out of the window and in a loud voice cried, "Look and see our God. what we do for the sanctification of thy great name. Thus the precious children of Zion, the Jews of Mayans, tied their sons as Abraham tied Isaac, his son, and they received upon themselves with a willing soul the yoke of the fear of God, the King of the kings of kings, the Holy One, blessed be he. The blood of husband mingled with their wives, the blood of fathers with their children, the blood of brothers with their sister, the blood of teachers with their disciples, the blood of grooms with their brides, the blood of community leaders with their cantors, the blood of judges with their scribes, and the blood of infants and sucklings with their mothers. For the unity of God's honor and awe-inspired name were they killed and slaughtered. The ears of him who hears these things will tingle, for who ever heard anything like this? Were there ever 1,100 offerings in one day, each one of them like the sacrifice of Isaac, the son of Abraham? Wilt thou, despite this, still restrain thyself, O Lord? For thy sake it was these numberless souls were killed. Avenge quickly the blood of thy servants, which was spilled in our days and in our sight. Amen.
Historians have noted the uniqueness, the horrific uniqueness of the response of the Jews of these cities of Ashkenaz, of the Rhineland, to their particular persecution. I'm sure some of you couldn't help but notice what strikes you as just incredibly horrific and rather surprising, knowing what we know of Jewish tradition. So it's not just suicide, right? It's murder. I don't say that in judgmental fashion. In fact, it's far be us to judge. But you can't help but be shocked by the response to persecution. We don't have time to discuss it in great length, but suffice it to say, the Jews of the Rhineland were well aware of the preciousness that Jewish tradition gives to life, well aware of the laws and the halachot about taking life. So the only conclusion we can really come to is to appreciate the horror of their situation. What they must have seen, the barbarism, the torture, the horror that this mass, the mob of the Crusades, and that's really what it was. It wasn't an organized effort of soldiers. Most of them were what we might call riffraff, for whom attacking the Jewish community was license to plunder, to erase debt. One can only imagine what they saw that would have made them decide better to take the lives of their loved ones in a compassionate way rather than subject them to the horrors of this mob. It's not for us to analyze, decide halachically, it's right, it's wrong, but just to appreciate the horror of what they faced and the horror of what they had to go through and the choices that they made. Please turn to page 132 in Rosenfeld, page 270 in the Art Scroll. And we have here a kinnah that was written by an eyewitness, by a survivor of the First Crusade, Kalonymus ben Yehuda. The kinnah, as hopefully you'll follow along and you'll see, recounts the horror. It names some of the cities by name. It references dates and expresses the horror as only a poet can. So if we have a volunteer to read the Hebrew, this one will be read in the responsive style, with the reader reading each stanza, and then we respond with the refrain at the end of each paragraph, Al Beis Yisrael ve'al Am Hashem.
Mi tenor shimai veni mi karnos lai, v'chol kol yimoy sa v'lai lai, eschal lai takvai v'lai v'chishek alai, v'atem anu avoy oy v'alai, v'chu v'chem rav erav.
Al Beis Yisrael ve'al Am Adonai, ki naflu b'charev.
Zamoati by Nivel Hali, Stevochim, Alchaimi, Mare Leva, Hanuchim, Absolos, Ayafos, Ladim Harakim, Misibrahim, Rahim, Vatavach Nim Shachim, Admuetsem, Mitnimim, Sapirim, Venefachim, Kemoti Chutzot, Nidashim, Nir Shachim, Surutame, Karulamo, Milakarev.
Abase Israel, the Alama Dunai, Kinaklu, Becharev.
Tehrad, a needy mav, a lila vanuda, Luchilach Gorsak, a krala haspida, Mipadikaram is a hafamuda, Mipnima, Kuda, Kavod, Kol, Klechemda, Risisa, Kirua, Shukla, the Gal Muda, Hatarab, Hamikrab, Hamishnav, Hagada, and Uvekonanu, Zosmahagida, Ace Sora Vesamut, Halamda, Halo Hamakom, and Yoshe Karev.
Abeis Israel, Yal Amadonai, Kinaflu, Becharev.
Ya Papa Yuzlumayim Demalahagira, Akonain Mar Al Haruge Ashbira, Bisheni Bishmonavo, Biyom Maruga, Hukra, Margoa, Lirigua, Nechlefu, Avira, Nehergubachare Chemed, Vichishe Hadara, Nesafu Yachad, Nafsha, Hishlu, Mara, Yichuchim. Hamiuchad yichadu begura giborei koach osei dvora dvoro lemahara v'chonei v'alamad nivah kulam asara.
Abeis Yisrael v'alam Adonai kinafu v'charev.
Uvimar yigoni v'atzabi yilel achbira kilos hakodesh harigasam hayom bezachra gahal vormaiza b'chuna v'chura gaonei eret unkiye tahara Pamayim Kidushe, Shem Hamuchad Mara, Besrim Ushosh, Vachodish Ziv, Latara, Vachodish Ashlishi, Kiryas Halel Lishara, Hishlimu Nafsham Avak Shura, Ahima Aleim Bebechi Yilel Lishara, Kulule Kesser, Arosham Latara,
Abes Israel, Yala Madunai, Kinaflu, Bechare,
Veal Adire Kahal Magen Saha Hadura, Minsharim Kalum Aros, Lihis Gabra, Hishlimu nafsham al yichud shem hanara, aleihem zakab, azakat shever, azak benefesh mara, al shnei mikdashai yisodam kayom arura, al charavos maat mikdashai umidrushe hatara.
Abeis Yisrael, v'al am Adonai, ki naflu becharev.
Bachodesh hashlishi, bashlishi, nosaf od avon ume'era, hachodesh asher nehapach liagon bitzara, ביום מתן דס שיברתי להיס אשרה, וביום ניסי ניסונה כמו כן אז חזרה, על סבא למרום למקום מדורה, אם תקה ונר תקה והדורשה וחוקרה, לומדיה ושונה באישון כמו אורה.
Abeis Israel, Yalam Adonai, Kinaflu Becharev.
Simuna alavavchem misbeid mar lekashara, Kichikula argiosam Isabel ulihis apara, Kisrefas basaloheinu alum habira, Vichien lahosif moed shever visavera, Vein lahakdim zulasil asara, Tachas ken hayom livasi aera, Espadab ailab ebcha benefesh mara, Vanchasi kivada kavda viboker vadarev.
Abeis Yisrael, Yal Amadonai, Kinaflu Becharev.
Al Eile Ami Bochia, Vlibino Amnihimos, Vekra Limikonenos, Vel Hachachamos, Eli Vela Kulam Homos, Hayesh Michaov Limichovil Damos, Michut Tishakel Cherev, Umechadarim Amos, Chalai Chalai Cherev Mutalim, Arumi Arumos, Nivlasar Kasucha Lechayat, Eret Lehevos, Yonek, Im Ish Seva, Alamim Alamos,
Abeis Israel, Yalam Adonai, Kinaflu Becharev.
Misadatim Bemomona, Marbis Klimos, Eloheimo, Amrut Sur Chasubo Admos, Yavo, Vyoshia, Vyachser Neshamos, Chasin Ya, Michamocha Noseb Alumos, Techeshev Tit Apak, Velo Tachkor Chemos, Bemor Eli Mal Igai, Im Elohim, Hu Yarev.
Abeis Israel, Yalam Adonai, Kinaflu Becharev.
Eini, Eini Yardamayim, Kinepach Le'evel Mishorer, Ugavi Lekol Bochim, Milhafeg, Ulkarer, Mi yanud li ve'en machzik li darer chema bit yatsa v'sa'ar miskorer achalni hamamani hatsar hatsarer shiberat mosai zarer umifarer sila kol abirai hatabor v'hatsorer makasi anusha ve'en mas'il mizorer rita umazor ein livarer alken amarti se'umenu Amarer, Babachi, Vidimasi, Al, Lechel, Tzarev.
Al Beis Yisrael, Al Amadonai, Kinaflu, Becharev.
Please turn to page 4 in your booklet. While the First Crusade gets most of the attention and was certainly the most devastating, subsequent crusades spawned riots and massacres in more localized Jewish communities, but each of which was as devastating for that community as some of the other crusades had been elsewhere. Each year I choose one particular event or massacre. I thought this one might be of particular interest to this audience. So if you'll please volunteer, read on page 4 the introduction to the York riot and massacre of 1190. I included some photographs that can't really see very much in the photographs on the photocopy, but if you visit this particular location in England, Clifford's Tower, you can actually see the remnants of the burning that's referenced in this historical reading in the Kina.
Anti-Semitic feeling was running high throughout Western Europe in the 12th century, stoked by Christian fervor of the Crusades. England's new king, Richard I, was about to set off on a crusade himself. Rioting had spread throughout England since prominent Jews, including Benedict of York, had been denied entry to King Richard I's coronation banquet in 1189. Rioting began in York with a mob attempting to burn down Benedict's palatial house. The Jews were officially protected by the king as his feudal vassals and sought protection in the royal castle, barricading themselves in the wooden keep. The rioters, meanwhile, were egged on by members of the local gentry, who saw the riots as an opportunity to wipe out the extensive debts they owed to Jewish moneylenders in the city. As a group of knights arrived to attack the castle, supported by siege engines, a fiery hermit who had been inciting the mob was killed by a falling stone. This event further incensed the angry crowd, now baying for Jewish blood. The blackened remains of the fire were uncovered in excavations at Clifford's Tower in the 20th century. From the ashes of that fire, the present stone keep of Clifford's Tower was constructed. The events at York were an affront to the dignity and authority of King Richard, and so a royal inquest was held soon afterwards. But by that time, the instigators had escaped, and no individuals were ever punished for the crimes committed on that fateful night. The massacre of 1190 was a horrific catalogue of violence and murder driven by religious intolerance and the greed of those who owed the leading Jewish moneylenders money. And it was sadly only one of countless incidents of mob violence against Jewish communities across England and Western Europe in the Middle Ages.
Continue.
From Ephraim of Bonn's Hebrew account of the York Massacre, translated in A History of the Jews in England, by Cecil Roth, Chapter 2. Afterwards, in the year 4551, 1190, the wanderers came upon the people of the Lord in the city of York in England, on the great Sabbath before Passover, and the season of the miracle was changed to disaster and punishment. All fled to the royal castle, where Rabbi Yom Tov waited. The number of those slain and burned was 150 souls, men and women, all holy bodies. Their houses, moreover, they destroyed, and they despoiled their gold and silver, and the splendid books which they had written in great number, precious as gold, there being none like them for their beauty and splendor. These they brought to Cologne and to other places, where they sold them back to the Jews.
We have a kinnah that was written specifically in response to this massacre. If you have the Rosenfeld kinnah, please turn to page 171. This kinnah does not appear in the Art Scroll collection, so if you have either the booklet of photographed kinnah, or if you have a Rosenfeld, please try to make it available, share with someone who's sitting next to you. Do we have a volunteer to read the Hebrew? What about the English? We have a volunteer for the English? Okay, I'll read the English.
מה תדבחיכם כוס ובייך תלעתי טובים אשר בנו תחליב את אמיתי ולייך ים גם שם תשוטתי הוי חרב לדוני עד ענה לא תשקוטי
Sword, wherefore turnest thou in all directions, consuming all around thee? Thou diminished and make an end of the best among us, and even to the isles of the sea, thou wentest thy way. Sword of the Lord, how long before but thou will find rest?
נדמו יושבי ונחרט מאב הים, אי כבוד גלב יניב בים, ידו מישלח מיני הים, ידו מכיסותם כניסי הים.
Silenced are the inhabitants of the isles, cut off in their delight. Glory has vanished and is no more. He waved his mighty sword, his hand dealt calamity, and lo, where are they? All the princes of the sea have come down from their thrones. Towards their mother's bosoms, children stretched forth their neck, while the fathers blessed the sacrifice they were about to offer. Hurled down from the rock were the nobles among them. They were stripped of their robes and embroidered garments. Oh, who will bewail the perfect in beauty, those crowned with the Torah, who were reared on scarlet for dominion and sovereignty, who were clothed in silk and overthrew their adversaries? How is the strong staff broken, the beautiful rod? Precious treasures the pure did not desire. Wherefore their souls are bound up in the bundle of life. They spurned the vanity of life as though poor and of low degree. Thus they gave glory to God and declared his praise in the isles. Behold, O Lord, they would scale heavens if they could, even as they tore down the curtain in thy house while reveling in blasphemy. Raving like madmen, they intended evil against thee. They imagined devices which they were powerless to fulfill.
תמים פועל גם על טוב ונתיביו, ממנו משפטו עושה טוב בחובב, ובריאה קלח על טוב בנקביו, אף אלוהים ממחת ראש אויביו.
Perfect one, you have recompensed him according to his way. He wrought his own doom, his pride became his guilt. An insignificant creature gnawed him away. Surely God woundeth the head of his enemies.
Ram ken hashem lachunim el chikam, gmur shivatayim nitivcha el atikem, הראם חוכך משאלותם חשקה, ישמח צדיק כי חזה נקם.
Exalted one, thus render retribution to his successors, pay them sevenfold. He pulled them out for the slaughter. Fulfill the petition and desire of those who hope in you. Let the righteous rejoice to have seen the vengeance. Bring salvation to your people for the love of their martyrs, forgive their transgression, cause rejoicing and delight to the portion of your lot. Let Israel bathe his feet in the blood of the wicked. Then shall I rejoice in thee, my Creator. To you I will sing praises, my rock and my redeemer. With musical instruments I will crown my praise of thee, O God, who granteth me revenge. Turn to page 5 in your booklet. When we talked about the aftermath of the Bar Kokhba revolt, we talked about the attack not necessarily on the Jewish people, but on Jewish learning. Well, that attack has repeated itself at times throughout Jewish history. One of the most famous events is the campaign to obliterate the Talmud, that great source of Jewish learning, in Europe and specifically in Paris in 1242 of the Common Era. We'll read a historical introduction and first-hand account of this campaign on page 5. I will tell you that when I found myself in Paris a few years ago and stood in the courtyard of the Cathedral of Notre Dame, there were many people who were gawking and taking in the sights and the architecture, and I was looking at the ground and at the floor and imagining, knowing that it was in that very courtyard that the burning of the Talmud took place in 1242. So if we have a volunteer to read on the top of page 5, read the entire page.
Burning of Jewish books in Paris, 1242. Nicholas Donnan, a Jewish convert to Christianity, lived in Paris in the first half of the 13th century. Having been excommunicated by the Jewish community in 1225, Donnan joined the Franciscan order. His first act of retaliation was to stir up the bloody Crusader persecutions in Brittany, Poitou, and Anjou, in which 3,000 Jews were killed. In 1238, Donnan went to Rome, presented himself before Pope Gregory IX, and denounced the Talmud as containing blasphemies against Jesus and Christianity. The Pope was easily convinced of the truth of the accusation and dispatched to the authorities of the Church an order to seize all copies of the Talmud and deposit them with the Dominican and Franciscans. If an excommunication substantiated the charges of Donnan, the books were to be burned. This order was generally disregarded except in France, where the Jews were compelled under pain of death to surrender all copies of the Talmud, pending clarification of the charges. Louis IX ordered four of the most distinguished rabbis of France, Rabbi Chiel of Paris, Rabbi Moshe of Cousy, Rabbi Yehuda of Melun, and Rabbi Shmuel ben Shlomo of Chateau Thierry, to answer Donnan in a public disputation. In vain did the rabbis disprove the charges of blasphemy and immorality. 24 cartloads were consigned to the flames in 1242. The occasion was commemorated in the mayor of Rottenburg's Dersh, Chalice Rufabeige. The following accounts come from the letter of Bishop Odo of Tusculum to Pope Innocent IV, the Jew in the medieval world. At the time of the Holy Pope Gregory IX, of happy memory, a certain convert by the name of Nicholas Donnan related to the said Pope that the Jews, not satisfied with the ancient law which God had transmitted in writing through Moses, and even completely ignoring it, asserted that a different law, which is called Talmud, that is, teaching, had been given by God. And, they say, that it was handed down to Moses verbally and was implanted in their minds. It was thus preserved unwritten until certain men came whom they called sages and scribes, who, lest this Talmudic law disappear from the minds of men through forgetfulness, reduced it to writing, the size of which far exceeds the text of the Bible. In this are contained so many unspeakable insults that it arouses shame in those who read it, and horror in those who hear it. This too is the chief factor that holds the Jews obstinate in their perfidy, rejection of Christianity. When he heard of these things, the Pope saw fit to write, June 9, 1239, to all archbishops of the Kingdom of France as follows. Wherefore, since this Talmud is said to be the chief cause that holds the Jews obstinate in their perfidy, we thought that your fraternity should be warned and urged, and we herewith order you by apostolic letters that on the first Saturday of the Lent to come, March 3, 1240, in the morning, while the Jews are gathered in the synagogues, you shall by our order seize all the books of the Jews who live in your districts, and have these books carefully guarded in the possession of the Dominican and Franciscan friars. Likewise, June 20, 1239, he sent orders to the bishop and the prior of the Dominicans, and to the minister of the Franciscan friars of Paris as follows. Wherefore, since this Talmud is said to be the most important reason why the Jews remain obstinate in their perfidy, we, through apostolic letters, order your discretion of the Jews who live in the kingdoms of France, England, Aragon, Navarre, Castile, Leon, and Portugal, forced by the secular arm to give up their books. Those books in which you will find errors of this sort, you shall cause to be burned at the stake. By apostolic power and through use of ecclesiastical censure, you will silence all opponents. All books that have been intercepted were put under stamp and seal. A careful examination having afterwards been made, it was discovered that the said books were full of errors, and that these books turned the Jews away not only from an understanding of the Spirit, but inclined them to fables and lies. After the said examination had been made, and the advice of all the teachers of theology and canon law, and of many others had been taken, all the said books which could then be gotten hold of were consigned to the flames in 1242, in accordance with the apostolic decree of 1239.
We're actually not going to read this kinna, just in the interest of time, but we do have to point out its significance. Up until now, kinnot have been written to commemorate the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, of Jewish communities, the loss of life, and here the great Rav Meir of Rothenburg saw it fit to compose a kinna lamenting the loss of Jewish books. And we have to understand, and it's hard in with our modern perspective, when we think of 24 cartloads of books. Okay, that's a lot of books, and it's a loss of a library. But how could that have moved the great Rav Meir of Rothenburg to write a kinna? How does that take its place in the annals of the tragedies of Jewish history? And again, to understand the historical context, before printing press, manuscripts were precious. Books did not exist the way they exist now. When you had a class of teacher and students, not every student had a copy of the text. There probably was not more than one for the entire class. 24 cartloads of the Talmud in Paris represented almost the entirety of the extant manuscripts of the Talmud. This was viewed as a catastrophic loss of Jewish learning and called into question whether or not Jewish learning could and would continue, at least in that particular area. Being as resilient as the Jewish people are, we know that Jewish learning does continue. But at the moment and at the time, this was viewed also as an unspeakable tragedy worthy of composing a kinna to add to the collection of kinnot that we have on Tisha B'Av. Moving from Ashkenaz and the Jews of France to the Jews of Spain. The Jews of Spain were the continuation of the great Jewish communities of Babylonia. As the Islamic Empire took hold in Babylonia and made its way through the Middle East and through North Africa and eventually to Spain, the Jewish community followed, and by the early Middle Ages, the turn of the millennium, the Jewish community had essentially relocated itself to Spain. Spain was the most significant, the most glorious Jewish community, represented in centuries referred to as the Golden Age of Spain. An incredible amount of Jewish creativity in learning, in Perush, in the writing of poetry. And it was a community that truly was a glorious one. It participated in all walks of life, even under Islamic rule, even though they were technically accorded second-class citizenship. Nonetheless, they flourished, they advised kings, they had positions of prominence, and again, Jewish learning and Jewish life flourished. With the Reconquista, the push of Christian Europe to retake the Iberian Peninsula from the north and to drive out the infidel Muslims, the Jews of Spain found themselves now under the rule of a far less accommodating and hospitable rule, namely that of the Catholic Church. And even though the demise of the community is somewhat a slow one, starting 100 years before the expulsion, there are pogroms, there are anti-Jewish laws that are enacted, mostly out of fear that Jews were hindering the conversion of Jews to Christianity and were hurting the chances of those who had converted to Christianity, because they wanted the benefits of living in Christian society, where they were hindering their full integration into Christian society. And so in 1492, when Ferdinand and Isabella realized that the Inquisition that they had started to seek out the Inquisition is mounted against Jews who were conversos, Jews who were insincere converts. The Inquisition really didn't focus at all on openly practicing Jews. It focused on those who had committed themselves verbally to Christianity but continued to practice their Judaism in secret. They came to the conclusion that the reason why these conversos continued to practice Judaism in secret and failed to fully integrate into Christian society was because they had practicing Jews to whom they could turn for inspiration, encouragement. They were their lifeline. And so in 1492, Ferdinand and Isabella decided that all openly practicing Jews would have to leave Spain, hopefully to facilitate, number one, further conversions on the part of those who didn't want to leave, but more importantly, that it would facilitate the assimilation of those who had chosen conversion into Catholic society in its fullest. So let's read excerpts from the expulsion of the Jews, the expulsion edict, which brings to a close one of the proudest and most glorious communities of Jews that the world has ever seen, a community that existed with strength for 700 years. In many ways, the longest running Jewish community in history. Think about that. Top of page 6.
The expulsion from Spain, 1492. The edict of the expulsion of the Jews. 1. King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella, by the grace of God, King and Queen of Castile, Leon and Aragon, to all whom matter contained in this charter pertains or may pertain, salutations and grace. 2. Whereas we have been informed that these are kingdoms here where some wicked Christians who Judaized and apostatized from a holy Catholic faith, the great cause of which was interaction between the Jews and these Christians, we procured and gave order that the Inquisition should be made in our aforementioned kingship and lordships, by which many guilty persons have been discovered. 3. Notwithstanding, because every day it was found and appears that the said Jews increased in continuing their evil and wicked purpose wherever they live and congregate. 4. Therefore, we resolve to order the said Jews and Jewesses of our kingdoms to depart and never to return. or come back to them or to any of them, and that by the end of the month of July next of the present year, if they do not perform and comply with his command and should be found in our said kingdom and lordships and should in any manner live in them, they incur the penalty of death without further trial, sentence, or declaration. 6. And we command all councils, justices, magistrates, knights, squires, officials, and all good men of our said kingdoms that they preserve and comply with and cause to be preserved and complied with this or charter and all that is contained in it. 7. Given in our city of Granada, the 31st day of the month of March, the year 1492 years. I, the king, I, the queen, I, Juan de Coloma, secretary of the king and queen or lords, have caused this to be written at their command.
And the next source.
Yehuda Baer, A History of the Jews in Christian Spain, page 439. The Jews had to leave Spain within 3 months after the promulgation of the Edict of Expulsion on April 29, 1492. On July 31, 1492, the 7th of Av, the last Jew left the soil of Spain. According to Rabbi Don Isaac Abarbanel, one of the men who figured very prominently in the whole chapter of the expulsion, all the Jews left Spain on a single day, the 9th of Av.
And thus the Jews of Spain saw themselves, the expulsion of their community, the end to this glorious period of Jewish history, as another link in the tragic chain of Tisha B'Av. We'll skip the last source on page 6 and turn to page 7. Back to the Jews of Ashkenaz. By the end of the 13th century, one by one, the countries or provinces of Western and Central Europe expelled their Jews. England has the very dubious distinction of being the first government to officially expel its Jews, followed very quickly by France in 1306. Jews continued to move east. Jews are expelled from Germany in 1348. And they continue to make their way east, settling in the Ukraine and the western parts of what would become Russia. In Poland, of course, the locus of Jewish life from the 15th through 17th centuries, the Jews once again created from the ashes of destruction a glorious community, one that was far-flung and self-governed by the Vlad Arba Arazot. Again, a period of Jewish flourishing economically, and of course, a period of the flourishing of Jewish learning. So much of the cornerstones of our halachic system emerged from Poland during these centuries. But as so often happened, with the success of the Jews comes the envy and frustration of their neighbors. The Jews were used oftentimes as middlemen by the nobles, who taxed the Jews because the Jews were capable of generating cash. The nobles or the government taxed the Jews. The Jews generated their cash through their business interactions with oftentimes the peasant class by making loans, money lending, but also through their businesses. And so when the Jews flourished and the lower classes suffered economically, the wrath of that lower class was turned not against the nobility, which was the source of the problem, because as the nobility increased taxes, the Jews had no choice but to generate more cash to meet those obligations. But their wrath was kindled against the Jews, who were their
immediate contacts, those who they sensed were taking their money, if you will. The other thing that made the Jews welcome targets is that it was very difficult to attack the government. The government had soldiers. It was very difficult to attack the local nobility because they lived in fortified castles with their own armies. But the Jews lived in open villages and depended on the government by charter for their protection. So if you had to take your wrath out on a people, it was obviously going to be the people with whom you interacted most directly, and people who could not defend themselves, and it was no guarantee that the government officials would come to their defense. In the middle of the 17th century, this frustration on the part of Ukrainian peasants, also known as Cossacks, erupted into full-fledged murderous pogroms, which resulted in the death of tens and tens of thousands, probably more than 100,000 Jews. The single greatest loss of Jewish life in history until the Holocaust. Please read the introduction on page 7.
In 1648, Poland became the scene of a terrible civil war and peasant uprising led by the Cossacks. Ukrainian peasants were particularly bitter against the Jewish stewards of the larger estates. The sufferings that the Jews underwent in 1648-49 are almost too horrible to relate. The following account, which deals with the destruction of the Jewish community of Memerov and Podolia, is taken from the Hebrew Chronicle, Yevon Metzula, Abbess of Despair, a first-hand account of the events published in 1653 by Nathan Hanover, a Polish rabbi whose own father was martyred in the horror of 1648. The oppressor, Chmielnicki, may his name be blotted out, heard that many Jews had assembled in the holy community of Nemirov, and they had a great deal of silver and gold with them. Accordingly, Chmielnicki sent a certain leader, an enemy of the Jews, and about 600 swordsmen with him against this honored congregation. In addition, he wrote to the magistrates of the city that they should help this band. To this, the citizens readily responded that it would help them with all their might because of their hatred of the Jews. It came to pass on Wednesday, the 20th of Sivan, that the Cossacks drew near to the city of Nemirov. When the Jews saw the troops from far, they were frightened, though they did not yet know whether they were Polish or Cossack. Nevertheless, all the Jews went with their wives and infants with their silver and gold into the fortress and locked and barred its doors, ready to fight them. What did these scoundrels, these Cossacks, do? They made flags like the Poles, for there is no other way to distinguish between the Polish and the Cossack forces except through the banners. The Jews, who were standing on the wall, seeing that the banners were like the flags of the Polish forces, immediately opened the gates to them. No sooner had the gates been opened than the Cossacks entered with drawn swords, and the townsmen too, with swords, lances, scythes, some only with clubs, and they killed the Jews in huge number. They raped women and young girls. Some of the women and maidens jumped into the moat near the fortress in order that the Gentiles should not defile them or drown in the water. Many of the men who could swim also jumped into the water and swam, thinking they could save themselves from slaughter. The Russians swam after them with their swords and their scythes and killed them in the water. Some of the enemy, too, kept on shooting with their guns into the moat, killing them until finally the water was red and with the blood of the slain.
Kin number 30 on page 137 in Rosenfeld or page 286 in the Art Scroll is an expression of Jewish exasperation. It's attributed to Kalir, which only adds to the mystery considering the references to 1,000 years of Jewish mourning, but it essentially takes the larger view of Jewish history and says, how can it be that we continue year after year, generation after generation, to be persecuted, murdered? How do we keep the faith? How do we keep yearning for salvation? Middle of page 137, Rabbi Kelman will read each stanza, and we respond with the refrain, Ve'ech Enachem, how do we find comfort?
Et nachmuni habel, bechinurida fagleibel, benachmat habel, kabar alai osebel.
Ve'eich enachim.
Bezeh bechol yom, bechol zeh yom bechol shana, idan alai shina, binini aguma vaguna, yoter me'elef shana.
Ve'eich enachim.
Kabar karam, minignazaram, mimishneshi varam, mimisarei maram.
Ve'eich enachim.
Dibrati chariba. Etrei nishpa v'rabati ahali v'ama v'atad yashva
v'eich enachem
u'al aryei misufcho al aryel v'ispicho v'eglam misuko minchato v'nisko
v'eich enachem
v'arak hamonim m'shuchei shemanim v'ibuy nimnim p'rchei kohanim alafim shemonim
v'eich enachem
Ami boy bibi bazarat amalvi, are yakamolabi adam kohain binavi. Arash the masoot, ear malayatishuot, ubate sofrim, umishnayot, yoter mir bamayot. Tasamadai, abate kamudai, umashlama makmadai, bikarimadai. Yatsalechanek, bne gurmiz. V've'achad l'shanek yasis olel v'yonek
V'eich enachem
Kavda shalishit al kodesh reishit v'tseshet charishit bata l'hashit
V'eich enachem
L'chatsa l'chalek v'nechalak v'cholek She'ein lachem chilek b'shem el dolek
V'eich enachem
Umarda Edom, adushat Adom Atza b'zadon l'avei keis v'hadom
V'eich enachem
Noadu im yadmon, moab amon L'ashpit amon u'lachriv armon
V'eich enachem
Sila kol avimrai v'edrei chavirai Behulgu givorai le'ein kol overai.
V'eich enachem.
Ayefa nafshi l'orgim l'mispar harugim. Kayol orgim balecha neharagim.
V'eich enachem.
Uletzu b'yom kerab, mizrach b'marab. Damam me'urav kahal v'amrab.
V'eich enachem.
Sarot al sarot, zumi zumi tzirot, gedolot ubitzurot, arukot ulokit sarot.
V'eich enachem.
Kashrutinatam, v'chagruchanitam, v'asbum achanotam, v'erichu l'maniotam.
V'eich enachem.
Rabot al chotai, v'atzumot zichotai, Rabuna hamotai vata adonai admatai.
V'eich enachem.
Shamata cherpatam, cherpuni bisvatam, shivtam ekimatam, banim makinatam.
V'eich enachem.
Nikmatchem epo, malachem po, chara po, v'yein hod lirpo.
V'eich enachem.
Tishuvotechem nisharu ma'al, Honuni ode abal, ad yashki biyarem imal, morit shol vayal.
Ve'oz enochim.
Turn to page 8 in your booklet. Following the horrific pogroms in the 17th century, the Jews press further east, deeper into Russia, where once again, despite all the challenges of the Pale of Settlement and various economic restrictions, Jewish life is reasserted, shtetl life. The 19th century is a new chapter in Jewish history, certainly in world history, but it represents what we might refer to as modern anti-Semitism. Gone are the days where the mob would simply attack Jews out of hatred or because they felt economically oppressed. In the 19th century, the world experienced, the world of Europe experienced enlightenment, new concepts that governed civilization. There was a great hope for the Jewish people because, after all, the ideas that were being expressed would have seemed to include the Jewish people, the basic humanity rights for people. even within socialism, the brotherhood of mankind, the importance of national fidelity, these were all things that the Jews felt they could be included as well, and by logic they should have. And that gives rise to what writers refer to as the Jewish problem. In the 19th century, the Jewish problem doesn't refer to the existence of the Jews, it refers to a conundrum, and that is, why is it that with all of this enlightenment, with all the talk of the rights of human beings, with all the talk of religion no longer playing a role or the dominant role in society, so why is it that the Jews continue to be oppressed and continue to be unwelcomed? In the middle of the 19th century, there was a great upturn of hope for the Jews of Russia. There was a more progressive czar who relinquished some of the restrictions, allowed Jews to live in cities, attend universities. But this alarmed some of the intellectuals who wished to have an enlightened society, but one that excluded the Jews. And so a new chapter in anti-Semitism emerges, and that is the intellectuals trying to articulate arguments against the inclusion of Jews in society, trying to make the case for why all of this enlightenment should apply to everyone except for the Jews. And this type of rhetoric amongst otherwise respected intellectuals lands up having devastating impact on the Jews. So we'll read a selection from Dostoevsky from 1877, which in many ways sets the tone for the pogroms that would follow only a few years later. Volunteer?
I am fully unable to believe in the screams of the Jews that they are so downtrodden, oppressed, and humiliated. How would it be if in Russia there were not 3 million Jews but 3 million Russians, and there were 80 million Jews? Would they permit them to acquire equal rights? Would they permit them to worship freely in their midst? Would they convert them into slaves? Worse than that, wouldn't they skin them all together? Wouldn't they slaughter them to the last man to the point of complete extermination, as they used to do with alien peoples in ancient times during their ancient history? Nay, I assure you that in the Russian people, there is no preconceived hatred of the Jew, but perhaps there is a dislike of him, and it arises not because of some racial or religious hate, but from other causes of which the Jew himself is guilty. Thus, Jewry is thriving precisely where the people are still ignorant, or not free, or the economically backward. The Jew, wherever he has settled, has still more humiliated and debauched the people. Their humanness were still more debased, and the educational level fell still lower. Their inescapable, inhumane misery, and with it despair, spreads still more disgustingly. And in truth, the whole activity of the Jews in these border regions of ours consists of rendering the native population, as much as possible, inescapably dependent on them, taking advantage of the local laws, and of course the reasons therefore is that status of his, that spirit of which specifically breathes pitilessness for everything that is not a Jew, with disrespect for any people and tribe, for every human creature who is not a Jew. Now, what if somehow, for some reason, our rural communes, the institutionalized systems of Russian peasant society, should disintegrate? That commune which is protected our poor native peasant against so many ills, what if straight away the Jew and his whole kihila, organized Jewry, should fall upon that liberated peasant? Why, of course, instantly this would be his end, his entire property, his whole strength, the very next day would come under the power of the Jew, and there would ensure such an era as can be compared not only with the era of serfdom, but even with that of the Tartar yoke.
One cannot underestimate the impact of the arguments of a writer like Dostoevsky on the Russian people. And so In 1881, when political unrest takes hold in Russia after the assassination of the Tsar, not only is there a series of economic laws that are reinstituted to try to essentially separate out the Jewish people and make it impossible for them to exist economically, but a series of pogroms and massacres are triggered, not so much state-sponsored, but certainly with very little resistance from the authorities. This set of pogroms and the economic restrictions that accompanied them essentially were effective in triggering the emigration of millions, millions of Jews who left Russia starting in 1881. Many of those Jews came to the United States in numbers never seen before in Jewish history. I believe the figure is about 2 million Jews came from Russia in about two or three decades from 1881 till the early 20th century. And of course, some started to make their way towards Palestine, contributing to the rise or the transformation of the Zionist movement from theory into practice. We don't have very many formal keynote that were written. The level of Hebrew writing in Russia was quite low. Poets wrote in Yiddish. We do have a very powerful lament, a kina, of the Balta pogrom from 1882, and I have the English translation on page 8, so I'd like someone to read it, please.
Tzion haloti shali v'shalom asirayim.
The English on page 8. We need someone to read the lament of the Balta pogrom.
Lament of the Balta pogrom. Misfortune, terror, and fury, we've never been without. Now, as in each century, and whither they come, we know not. Shout, Jews, shout loud as you can. So loud your shouts reaches on high, and wake up the old man. His sleep is just a lie. What's he trying to put over? What are we, flies in the wind? Is there nothing in our favor? Enough. It's got to end. All of us beaten hair and hide, our belongings tossed hither and thither, grooms taken from their brides, children from their mothers. Shout, children, shout loud as you can. So loud your shouts reach on high and wake up the old man. His sleep is just a lie. Listen, and you'll hear the babies in their cradles cry again. They plead with you that you might say, enough, it's got to end. Record it for all time to come, the murder and the dread. Torah scrolls are cut open, sacred parchments torn to shreds. Fly your parchment, fly aloft, till you reach the one on high. You can wake old Moses up, his sleep is just a lie.
The pogroms of 1881 and 1882 were in many ways a wake-up call for the Jews of Eastern Europe, that all of this enlightenment and all of this talk of an inclusive society was a farce. And suddenly the Jewish people were encouraged by visionary leaders to think about the Jewish future only in terms of creating a Jewish state. And so the longing for Tzion, which had of course been ever present in our history, was suddenly transformed into a national movement, one that had practical aims. This is a good opportunity for us to read the very beautiful kina of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi on page 152 in the Rosenfeld kina. It's on page 328 in the Art Scroll. We're going to forego the reading of the translation, again in the interest of time, but But as we read the Kina in Hebrew line by line, please take advantage of the English translation that you have to appreciate the beautiful words of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi and his longing for Tzion. You can read line by line, we'll follow along in the English.
Tzion halo tishali lishlom asirayim, dor shei shlom shlomech vehem yetzer adirayim, miyam mizrach mitzafon v'teiman, shalom v'rochok v'karov, tzii mikol avarayim, v'shlom asir tikva, v'ting dima'av katal chamon, v'nechsach v'rilatam al hararayim, divkot enutech ani tanim, v'eit echalom שיבת שבותך אני כיור לשיריים. ליבי לבית אל, ולפני אל מאוד יהמה למחניים, וכל פגעי תהריים. שם השכינה שכינה לך, והיוצך פתח למול שערי שחק שעריך. וכבוד אדוני לבד היה מעורך, ואין השמש וסהר בכוכבים נעיריך. ובחר לנפשי להשתפך במקום אשר רוח אלוהים שלוחה על בחיריך. עד בית מלוכה ועד כיסא אדוני, ואיך ישבו עבדים עלי כיסאות כבירייך. מי יצנני משוטט במקומות אשר נגלו אלוהים לחוזייך בצירייך. מי יעשה לי כנפיים וארחיק נדוד, אני לבטרי ולאבי בית בין בתרייך. אפול לאפי עלי את ארצך, וארצה אבנייך מאוד, ואחונן את אפירייך. כי בעומדי עלי קברות אבותיי, ואשתומים בחברון עלי מבחר קברייך. ואעבור ביעריך וכרמליך, ואעמוד בנלעדיך, ואשתוממה על הר עברייך. הר העברים בהור ההר, אשר שם שני אורים גדולים מעירייך ומורייך. חיי נשמות עביר ארצך, וממר דרור אבקת עפריך, ונופת צוף נהרייך, ינעם נפשי הלוך. ארום ויחף עלי חרבות שממה, אשר היו דיברייך, במקום אחרונך אשר נגנז, ובמקום קרובייך, אשר שכנו חדרי חדרייך, אגוז ואשליך באור נזרי, ואעקב זמן חילל בארץ טמאה את נזירייך. איך ירב לי אכול לשתות בעת החזר כי יסחבו הכלבים את כפירייך? או איך מאור יום יהי מתוק לעיניי בעוד אראה כפי עוברים פגרי נשרייך? כוס הגיונם לאט הרפי מעט כי כבר מלאו כשלי בנפשי ממורייך. עד אזכור אהלה אשתי חמריך ואזכור אהליגה ואמצא את שמרייך. ציון, קהילת יופי, אהבה וכן תקשבי מאז, ולך נקשו נפשות חברייך. הם השמחים לשלוותך, והכאובים על שממותך, ורוחים על שברייך. מבור שאיש שואפים נגדך, ומשתחווים איש במקומו אלה נוכח שערייך. עדרי המונך אשר גלו בהיפרזו מהר על הגבעה, ולא שכחו גדרייך. המחזיקים בשוליך, ומתאמצים לעלות לאחוז בסנסיני תמרייך. שנער ופטרוס היערכוך בגדם, ואם הבלם ידמו לתומייך באורייך. אל מי ידמו משיחייך, ואל מי נביאייך, ואל מי נביאייך ושרייך. ישנה ויחלוף כליל כל ממלכות העליל, חסנך לעולם לדור ודור נזרייך. יבך למושב אלוהייך, ואשרי אנוש יבחר ויקרא וישכון בחצריים. אשרי מחכה, ויגיע ויראה עלות עורך, ויבקעו עליו שחרייך, לראות בטובת בחירייך, ולעלוז בשמחתך, ושובך אלי קדמת נעורייך.
Despite the gallant efforts and incredible vision of the early Zionist leaders, Zionism was not able to prevent the greatest single horror and tragedy of Jewish history, where the anti-Semitism of Europe that had begun to rear its ugly head in the 19th century came to almost its logical but horrific conclusion that somehow not only were the Jews excluded from the rights and privileges of society, but they were not even deemed to be human and therefore were subject to extermination. How do we capture the magnitude and the horror of the Holocaust in one day, in 1 hour, certainly in a few minutes? It's just not possible. So we'll just try to connect with the horror and try to connect and link the Holocaust, if it can be done, with the line of Jewish tragedies through the ages and its connection to Tisha B'Av. So if I can get a volunteer, maybe someone on the women's side, to read the top of page 9 from Hillel Seidman's Warsaw Ghetto Diaries.
I don't think anyone will want to do it.
Okay. We'll take any volunteer.
July 22nd, 1942, Warsaw. As night falls, I finally reach home, my brain bursting with terrifying images. Crossing our courtyard, I notice our small shtiebel. About 20 men sit on upturned benches. It's Tisha B'Av tonight. Two flickering candles at the temporary prayer stand dimly light up the bent heads, with their eyes staring into the far distance as the heart-rending tune wells up, Eicha. The tune that was perhaps first composed at the exile from Jerusalem and has since absorbed the tears of generations. How alone Jerusalem sits, the great city of many inhabitants. How true, how real those ancient lamentations read. How accurate they describe our present catastrophe. We, Jews of Warsaw, sons of those exiles, sit on the ground to mourn our own personal korban, the destruction of a major community, the largest and most vigorous in Europe. We weep at our fate, a nation without a land, within the grasp of our fiercest enemy, and condemned to death. We grieve both for the loss of the Holy Temple and the extinction of our lives. July 23rd, 1942, Warsaw. I walk out into the street, as does everyone else, thirsting for news of the rumored deportations, only to discover that from this morning, the ghetto has been surrounded by Ukrainian militia. These include some Latvians and Lithuanians, angels of destruction of every type. Anyone approaching the walls is shot on the spot. We are ensnared in a trap. And so we march, old and young, women and children, rich and poor, in lines of 8 abreast according to the German system, in our many thousands, and the crowd stretches back as far as the eye can see. Everybody presses tightly together, so united in suffering, so totally an Am Echad. Never before have I sensed so palpably the strands which bind us Jews together, our common cause and our united purpose, like I do today on the death march.
If I could have a volunteer to read a very powerful poem by Avram Sutzkever entitled A Cartload of Shoes.
The wheels they drag and drag on, what do they bring and whose? They bring along a wagon filled with throbbing shoes. The wagon like a chuppah, an evening glow and chants. The shoes piled up and heaped up like people in a dance. A holiday, a wedding, as dazzling as a ball. The shoes, familiar, spreading, I recognize them all. The heels clatter with a fearsome din on their way from Vilna to Berlin. I must not ask you whose. My heart, it skips a beat. Tell me the truth, O shoes, where disappeared the feet? The feet of pumps so shoddy, with button drops like dew, where is the little body, where is the woman too? All children's shoes, but where? Are all the children's feet? Why does the bride not wear her shoes so bright and neat? Made of clogs and children's sandals, my mama's shoes I see. On Sabbath, like the candles, she put them on in glee. The heels clatter with a fearsome din on their way from Vilna to Berlin.
We'll read a kina that was written to commemorate the losses of the Holocaust by Rabbi Shimon Schwab. You can find it in the Art Scroll kinot on page 386. It doesn't appear in the Rosenfeld collection, but again, we do have, I think it's included in the packet of keynote. Let's try to see if we can share so that everybody can follow along. It will be read first one line in the Hebrew And then the translation. If you're reading the translation, you'll note that I put in vertical lines where the translation of each stanza ends, so it's a little bit easier to go back and forth.
Zocher maskir rav dor dor kadosha meis asheros bechartoni nizkor dreyon shaltor achron oya mehoy lanu. He who remembers those who remember him, each generation and holy ones, since the time you have chosen us. May he remember the gruesome fate of the last generation. Woe, what has happened to us? Shtufe mabol dom shemasru nafshosom kol shkuayim ke habafo yifkedeim alihim barzos achayim v'adeyad zikron l'vrocha. Those who were swept away by the flood of blood, who sacrificed their lives, all who were submerged in the valley of tears, may God think of them in the lands of eternal life. May their memory be a blessing for all of eternity. Suhu elov kapayim maha, eishamayim hoy al meitav shifte Yisrael, eidosu kilos arim gulilos, chaburos mosdos kol mardei el. Lift up your hands to him, woe, your heavens, woe over the best of Israel's tribes, communities and congregations, cities and districts, fraternities, foundations, all run the vote with God. Mi thein palgei mayim, teredeno inayim el ashtos nachlei hatmos, alei alfei alafim gufim nisrafim, b'moye shachar banuzos. If only streams of water could pour down from our eyes towards waterfalls of the rivers of tears, for the thousand times thousands of corpses consumed in the fire of destruction of horror. Al sarei ha-terah machzika mesorov, al pirkei ha-kuna ha-tsuyirim, al chovshei mitrashos umarim umaroz, tinokos beis rabban yakirim. For the princes of Torah, the pillars of tradition, for the young flowers of the priesthood, for the diligent scholars, the men, teachers, and women, and the precious children in school. Al banos b'tchos v'sovim v'sovos v'al zaron b'tapom sheyoldu v'gam l'rabos v'vos na'ovim b'chayim b'mosom lo nifrodu. The trusting daughters, the elderly grandparents and their offspring and their infants whom they bore everyone, including the myriads below, beloved in life, not parted by death. Es domim d'rosh kisisa es rosh shal kol nidav le'elim ha'trufim. Kol nafshos meis b'mei sheber b'sa'eis yisho alfei pomim alofim. Seek out their blood when you take count of all the scattered rent leaves of every life perished in the dark days of destruction, calamity, 6,000 times a thousand. Shlishim livo er b'virak zam so'er mikarmei ha-chemer chemet o'hafto go'el adon no zekher tzarom al timchei misper kosofto. Seek out blood when you take an entire third to be destroyed by the blitzkrieg's fury of the cherished vineyards. You dearly loved, O avenger of blood, the memory of their misery. Please do not erase from the book you have written. Zachor hanakot, barash tzokot, oz yuvlei l'retzach, yored emeihem v'dimos peneihem lo sishkachach no l'netzach. Remember the moans and tumultuous screams when they were herded for slaughter. May the rivers of their blood and the tears of their faces not be forgotten forever. Kalfil ugenicha unihi tzricha mishtudei lahakos haklovim zechorus for benodech tzor at eight nikom elbon aluvim. Every tremble, every groan, every piercing cry of those torn asunder by hordes of dogs. Remember and count them, collect them into your flask. Till the time degraded one's shame is avenged. Kol chel u'knicha u'nehi tzricha m'shtudei l'hakos haklovim zechor esvor b'nardek tzror ad eis nekom elbon aluvim. ונחנות הפרועים כאב ונגועים, ופחי נפשות אגומות, חרפות וצקות כליבות ורוק, פצעי הכוס איומות. In the barbarian's camp were pain and sickness, the anguish of mortified soul, insults and mockery, shame and spit, searing wounds from horrible blows.
Rabban, Simon, Shigon, Itzabon, Uvichishlan, Nechshavim, Belikoa, Bechol Nakos, Kalol, Bechol Yachid, Umlol, Chalila Lacham, Melishkoa, hunger, thirst, frenzy, sorrow, the faint stumbling without any strength, every death rattle of every forlorn one, far be it from you to forget. Urabon, Simeon, Shigurin, Itzabon, Shlon, Nachshon, Blikoach, Bechol Nakos, Cholol, Mikol Yachid, Umlol, Chalila, Lacham, Lishkoach.
Joey, go ahead. Read the Simros Hashan. I'll read the English translation.
Simros Hashan, Bikitar, Mikifshan, Tlay Tilim, Atzamos, Bikidim, Bechadre Haral, Kolshkos, Mikal Hanech Nakim,
the pillars of smoke, the fumes from furnace, piles and piles of bones and sinews, poison-filled halls, the roaring sound of the multitude choking in gas chambers. The stench of the bodies, the tortured corpses, fertilizers for the soil of the blasphemers, how the tormentors turned their fat into soap and human skin into feminine adornments.
The mean shibut perach salmoves lim lismo oil, eich yoru yirois al chofre habaros, bis surrei kibut keber horidum sheol.
Remember the finger motions of the savage officers, to the right, slave labor, to the left, the shadow of death. Remember how the sharpshooters shot at those digging their own graves, lowering them to the depths in the agony of the grave.
Eich inu afiaseinu besarsu benoseinu, Kosos tare lo mide rofim achzorim, ufilte hasuridim bimcholos usosorim, vitimion yiladim bibateh shemad kemorim.
And how they afflicted our sisters and mutilated our daughters, doses of poison from sadistic doctors, and fugitive survivors in burrows and bunkers, and the disappearance of children in houses of apostasy in monasteries.
Set amim lo dam bnei hagolo hoy Ariel niblas kasidecho tzayn kachim mi yimne asher yisram lo tzipe b'chunecho hoya mikachei shemecho.
Unblemished sheep, completely consumed, the blood of the diaspora's children. Woe, O Ariel, for the corpses of your devout ones, who could count the sacred flock whose flame will never be extinguished? Your tested ones were sanctifiers of your name. With the cry of Shema Yisrael, they gave up their lives for God, so that he might gather them in, and until the very last day they justified his judgment and called out, I believe, and sang a song of trust. And now a people is left, bewildered as an orphan, without graves at which to pray, without tombstones, where to weep the laments of emotion-filled hearts.
Rak niskei hadom askaroson tosisim b'li shokeach, v'horei efrei,
only blood libations are their memorials, boiling, unforgettable, and the mounds of ashes from their Akedah are tributes from the altar's ashes. Who can express Israel's torment, whose mind is frenzied by misery? The remnants of its splendor is a fraction of a bit, how its pride is humbled today. O living God, merciful one, comfort your congregation that yearns for you so mightily. Let new light shine, let rays of glory grow, and may God's spirit cover. Building on the last line of Rav Schwab's powerful kina, we say in tefillah every day, Or Chadash al Tzion Ta'ir. It is Tzion, it is our precious state of Israel that so closely followed the horrors of the Holocaust that provides us with the hope and the promise of a Jewish future. And even as we revel in the delight and the privilege and the gift that is the modern state of Israel, far too often we also experience the pain, the grief, the suffering of mothers, of fathers, siblings, children, of those who are killed still because they are Jews, because they dream the Jewish dream, and because they stand up for the nation of Israel. On page 10, a small tribute to the Israelis murdered in terrorist attacks since last Tisha B'Av. Just take a moment to pay tribute to them, to read just a little bit about who they are, to gaze on their faces, and the final lament will follow on page 178. Look at the different names and the different faces. Truly a collection of the glorious people of Israel, taken from all four corners of the earth, Kibbutz Galiot, the promise of a Jewish future. On page 178 in Rosenfeld, page 62 in the Art Scroll, I will read each stanza, and most appropriately for this last kina before we sing Eli Tzion, you'll respond with the refrain, Ad Ana B'chiya B'tzion U'mispeid B'Yerushalayim, for how much longer? We've already been at it for thousands of years. How much longer will there be weeping in Tzion and mourning in Jerusalem? Ad Ana B'chiya B'tzion U'mispeid B'Yerushalayim Terachem Tzion V'sivnech Olmos Yerushalayim Oz b'chataeinu, charav mikdash, uv'avonoseinu nisraf eichal, ba'ir shechubra la, kashra mispeid, utzva ha'shamayim nasu kina. Gam b'ach u'b'marash u'tei Yaakov, yaf mazalos gizu d'ma, diglei yishuru n'chafu rosham, kima uchzil kadruf nehem. Etiru avos v'yel kelo shomea tzoaku v'anim v'lo anua v'kol ha-Torah tzoek v'mara v'ro'en ne'eman lo hita ozen. Zera kodesh lopshu sakim utzva ha-shomayim sak hushas kesusam chashach ha-shemesh v'yareach kadar v'chol chavim osfu nagham. Taleri shon so ek bimar nafesh al ki chvasha ke chvasav lateva chuvalu yilala hishmiya shor bamromim ki al tavareinu nirdafnu kulanu. Kochav te'omim nirechalu, kidamachim nishpach kamayim, laret bikesh linpol sartan, kines alafnu mipnei tzama. Marom nivas mikol aryei, kishad aseinu al salam arom, nehergu besulos, gam bachurim alkein, besula kadrafaneha. Sibevos na yimuvikesh tchina ki nichra lanu kaf maves mechayim akrav lavash pachad urada ki becherev uvirav shefatanu tzureinu. Palgei mayim horidu dima kanachal ki os bakeshes lo nitan lanu tzafu mayim al roshenu. Uvidli malei chikeinu yavesh. Kerav nu karban velo niskabal gdi pasak seir chatasenu rachamanios bishlu yaldehen umazal dogim helim einav. Shachach nu shabbos bilibos shovavim shadai shikach kol tzidkosenu. Tekane l'tzion kin agidola v'sa'ir l'rabasi am me'od nagehecha. Terachem tzion v'sivne chomos Yerushalayim. If I could get a volunteer just to read on the last page of the booklet to recap our journey through the tragedies of Jewish history.
It is 586 BCE. The Babylonian armies have sacked Jerusalem, the temple is destroyed, and the Jewish people are forced into exile. It is 70 CE, Common Era. The Roman legions under Titus have crushed the Jewish revolt, leveled Jerusalem and the Second Temple, murdered thousands of Jews, and carried many others into slavery. It is 135, Common Era. The fortress of Beit Har has fallen to the Romans, thus ending the revolt of Bar Kokhba. It is 1096. The first crusades have brought death and destruction to Jewish communities up and down the Rhine Valley. It is 1146. It is the second crusade. Jewish communities in Germany and France have once again been massacred. It is 1189. The third crusade has led to bloody anti-Jewish rioting in cities all over England. It is 1242. 24 cartloads of the Talmud have been burned in Paris by church officials. It is 1290. The Jews have been expelled from England. It is 1306, the Jews have been expelled from France. It is 1348, the Black Death has brought mob violence to Jewish homes. It is 1480, the Inquisition has begun to reclaim the souls of Jews by burning their bodies. It is 1492, the Jews have been expelled from Spain after living there in peace for centuries. It is 1567, the Jews have been expelled from Italy. It is 1648, the hordes of Cossacks have massacred thousands of Polish Jews. It is 1882, the government instigated pogroms take place throughout the Jewish areas of Russia. It is 1929. Scores of Jewish men, women, and children, and elderly are slaughtered by Arabs in Hebron. It is 1945. One third of the Jewish people, 6 million human beings, have been murdered in German death factories. It is 1948. The Arab legions have expelled the 3,000-year-old Jewish communities of Old Jerusalem and reduced Jewish holy places to ruins. It is 1969. 14 imperial Zionist spies, 9 of whom Jews, have been hanged before cheering crowds and television cameras in public squares of Baghdad and Basra. It is 1970. A synagogue in Boston has been desecrated. Its Torah scrolls are burned. It is 1972. Israeli athletes are murdered in the Munich Olympics by Palestinian terrorists. It is 1973. The Arab nations attack Israel once again, this time on our Shabbat of Shabbats, desecrating our holiest city. But Jewish history goes on.
And despite all of these tragedies, there is no museum of the extinct Jewish people. Instead, our history lives on in us, and we're able to sit on Tisha B'Av, recount the tragedies, know the heritage that we are the recipients of, and make that commitment to pass it down to the next generation. Am Yisrael Chai. Please join me as we get up off the floor after spending the entire morning steeped in the sorrow of Jewish history, and we sing together the final Kina Eli Tzion Ve'areha. The very act of getting up off the floor is similar to that which we do when someone finishes sitting Shiva. We pick them up off their Shiva chair, we take a walk outside, we assure them that life will go on, and in this case, despite all of the suffering and tragedy of Jewish history, Jewish life will go on because we too will persevere as our ancestors have. Please join me, page 176 in the Rosenfeld, page 390 in the Art Scroll. Elitzion v'yareha kemo isha b'tzireha v'chiv sulach hagurasa al bal ne'ureha alei armon asher nutash v'yashmason adareha v'yal b'yas mechar fe'el v'sok mikdash chadareha Alei galus mishar seyel, Nimei shir zimareha, V'al damam asher shupach, Kemo meimei yeoreha, Alei hegyon mecholeha, Asher damam biyareha, V'al var asher shameimu, V'tul sanhedreha, Alei zilchei semideha, ufidyonei vechoreha, v'achilu kelei heichol, u'mizbach ketoreha, alei tapei melacheha, b'nei David gevireha, v'al yochyam asher choshach, v'yeis saruch esoreha, Alei chavod asher gala, b'yeis chorban divireha, v'al lochitz asher lachatz, v'sam sakim chagoreha, alei machatz v'rov makos asher huku nizireha, v'al niputz elei sela, O laleha ne'areha, alei simchas misan'eha, v'soch kamao shivareha, v'alinui v'nei chorin, nidiveha tehoreha, alei fesha asher avsa, silo derech ahashureha, v'al tzivos keholeha, Shizufeha shechoreha, alei kolos mecharfeha, v'yeis rabu figareha, v'yau rigshaf megadfeha, b'soch mishkan chatzereha, alei shimcha asher chulal, b'fi kamei mitzareha, V'yal tachan yishavulach kishov ushma amareha Eli tzion v'yareha kemo isha v'tzireha Chiv sulach agurasak avah